across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Haven't said anything yet, and Tim's on the line from Liverpool. Allegedly. Hello, Tim. Or indeed isn't. So, there we are. So where it says Tim General Natter in Liverpool?
It's not.
I don't care. We've got ourselves an interesting week this week, and so what we thought we'd do, Kath and Sam and I, is take a look at some of the more interesting stories that haven't really come through the curtain this week, and also today, one or two stories that haven't come through the curtain. For example, did you know, Kath,
yes,
that, thank you for sorting out some technology whilst I'm talking, and leaning across me
I'm sorry,
I haven't had a woman lean across me since, I think it was 1978.
Would you mind if I did it again?
Saturday Night Fever.
Oh.
And I'm not going to say her name because she is not my current wife. And she leant across me in the way that you're just leaning across me in the cinema. But we weren't at the back. And you can't canoodle at the cinema in any row other than row Z, can you?
Not really. It's not fair, is it, on anyone else?
No, you can put your arm around the person that you're with.
You can do a bit of sedate hand-holding.
Do you remember the first time you were taken to the cinema on a, what used to be called a date?
Yes.
What was the film?
It was the very unromantic Disney's Aladdin.
Aladdin?
Yeah.
No.
I know. I was. It shows the age.
What age were you?
Probably about 16.
And you knew it was a date?
Yeah.
And you knew that you'd get somebody will put their arm around you?
Yeah. I think I was testing him to see if, when he said, you can choose, I thought, really?
You can choose the film?
Yeah.
What were the options? Do you happen to remember?
Oh, I can't remember.
No.
There's probably some grown-up films there, but okay. I thought, I'm going to see if you'll let me see this one.
What time was the showing?
It wasn't a matinee.
I'm just asking. You see, I want all the information. I love information.
I can't quite remember. It was probably about six-ish.
So you're 16?
Yeah.
Had you been kissed yet?
Yes.
You had? You'd been kissed?
Yes.
You've done some proper kissing. So this wasn't your first kiss?
No. There was no kissing in Aladdin. I wanted to see that film.
That's the difficulty, isn't it, when you're on a date and you want to actually see the film?
Yeah.
The first film I took a girl to see was a film, I think it was called Soldier Blue, in which there's the most hideous Indian massacre by the cavalry. And I think what I was hoping to come across as, with the young lady, was someone deep and caring and politically motivated, a sort of male Joan Baez kind of. That's what I was pitching myself. But it didn't really work.
Oh, dear.
And on the way home in the car, because I was able to borrow my parents' car, she was able to say to me that her boyfriend was only on holiday and that was why she was available for a week.
Gosh.
Which I didn't realise. And she was sort of saying, and I'll be back with Steve on Saturday, but thanks for taking me to see Soldier Blue.
Gosh, just a short-term lease there.
Yes, excuse me. I got a coffee kiss at the end of it in her parents' living room. How did we get onto that? No idea. And why should we?
It was my leaning, my inappropriate leaning.
That's how conversation works. Our telephone number is 0344 499 1000. You can text. It's 8722. Start your message with Talk. That piece of communication will cost you
25p plus your standard message rate.
Standard message rate. Or you can tweet at Talk Radio. Sam, the civilization is due to end as we know it sometime in the next couple of decades.
Right.
And this is not a strange religious organisation saying it this time. It is a sort of very highly respected commentator called Paul Ehrlich, who comes out of Stanford University, where he's been since 1959. And he's the head of the Millennium Alliance for Humanity and the Biosphere.
Mm.
Which, when I was a boy, was Earth.
Yeah, are we not calling it that anymore?
Is it now a biosphere?
I guess.
And what he's saying is that... forgive me, I've had this tickly cough all week. I know you've noticed, and I hate hitting the cough button because it sounds odd. So I'm falling back on an old wives' tale remedy for a slightly tickly cough, which was given to me by somebody I was in panto with, Dongies, years ago, which is to sip Worcester sauce.
Liam Perrins.
I'm going to give it a go. and just see whether it sharpens the old. Ah! Slightly. Isn't that good? Whoa! So, what he's saying is that the world's optimum population is somewhere about or below 2 billion. Now, how many do you think we've got at the moment, fellow human beings on this planet? Do you have any idea?
No. I'd say probably more than 2 billion.
Yes.
3 billion.
Keep going.
10 billion.
5.6 billion. And notice that I didn't give it the newsreader's accent there when I used the word billion, because they never say billion. They always go billion, billion, like that, to make it seem bigger than it might seem if they just went 5.6 billion.
Yeah.
So Paul Erick is saying that there are almost three times more people already on the planet than we can sustain. That's the first problem. The second problem, he says, is that there is an unprecedented redistribution of wealth is necessary because of the overconsumption of resources. Basically, he's saying there are too many, but at the same time, very few, extremely rich people, and everyone else is poor. And we kind of all know that, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
But what can be done apart from the guillotine? I mean, how do you, a rich tax? Someone in the paper, somebody was saying yesterday that the time has come to seriously tax the seriously rich.
Mm.
But they'll find ways around it, won't they?
Of course they do, because they can employ seriously rich lawyers and
seriously rich
accountants.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I went down a very affluent high street in London today, just looking for a couple of little knick-knack presents for my wife and daughter. And I was quite shocked, really, by the disparity between some of the shops selling designer coffee, and there was a men's outfitters selling a belt in the window. It was £180. £180 for a belt. And yet, literally every 50 yards that I walked, there was somebody sitting on the pavement, usually outside shops that had been closed down, because they can't be asked to move on if they do that, with a little paper cup, begging. And I wanted to give everybody 50 pence. I think, who wouldn't? Can you walk past a person begging or selling a big issue without feeling something, even if you don't actually do it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's horrible.
It is. Such a disparity. So Paul Ehrlich, who is saying that civilization as we know it is going to implode within the next couple of decades, is saying that that's not because the sun is going to blow up or climate change is going to come and claim us, although he does have things to say about pollution. He says that the population has got out of hand, the distribution of wealth has got out of hand, and he does talk a little bit about pollution rather than climate change, because he's worried about chemical pollution, which he says has reached even the most remote corners of the globe. And I've actually got a little tidbit on that. Did you know, Kath, that they've discovered an island in the Pacific?
No.
It's a new island. You could almost live on it, but not quite. Because it is an island, that consists of a floating mass, conjoined mass, of plastic.
Oh, no.
Yes, sorry, Bob. Yep. A huge island. I'm going to tell you how big the island is. And I want to just make sure Sam's listening as well. When I tell you how big this island of plastic in the Pacific is, and it's plastic bottles and fishing nets and things and old road cones and all the rest of it. This island in the Pacific is, you ready for this? Twice the size of France.
What?
Twice the size of France.
I've got a theory about this, all this plastic.
Go on.
For a long time, we've been paying people to take away our waste, right?
Yeah.
And the cost of recycling as a business, it's very, very, very worth doing financially, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many of those companies that
just
we paid...
Just dump it overboard.
Yeah. Because this is too much. I mean, who's throwing away cones and things?
Researchers used a fleet of boats and aircraft to scan the accumulation of bottles, containers, fishing nets and other debris known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. They say it contains about 80,000 tonnes of buoyant plastic with more than 1.8 trillion individual pieces. I'm sorry, I'll read that again. 1.8 trillion individual pieces. Microplasts, fragments smaller than 5 millimetres in size, make up the vast majority of the island. They can enter the food chain if and when swallowed by fish. Almost half the total, by weight, was discarded fishing nets. They shouldn't do it. They mustn't do that. They mustn't just cut them. Why do they discard their fishing nets anyway? I would have thought a fishing net was very expensive. And why would you want to just jettison it over the side? You've got a little hole in it. You can't...
They used to fix them, didn't they?
I thought they used... Can they not fix them? Obviously, it's cheaper to get a new one. Bring up a new one from below. Although most large items had broken down into fragments, researchers were able to identify objects including containers, bottles, lids, packaging straps and ropes. Some had visible production dates, with the oldest manufactured in 1977. The island is island, it's twice the size of France, is located halfway between Hawaii and California. And it's formed because you get two converging currents at the sea surface. So you've got one current bringing plastic debris from one direction, and it meets a current bringing plastic debris from another direction, and they just conjoin. And they form, you know, this sort of carpet of plastic. It's got no depth to it, so obviously you can't build a holiday resort on it. The team from the Ocean Cleanup Foundation, which is a Dutch organisation, are hoping to scoop up half the debris, but it's going to take them 5 years. And they said that they were surprised by the build-up of larger plastic items, which accounted for more than 90% of the patch's mass. So, going back to what I was saying about this biologist, Paul Ehrlich, who is predicting that civilization as we know it has probably only got another one or two decades to go, he says that overpopulation of the planet, which has already happened, is one reason. The distribution of wealth, with so much being owned by so many people at the top. I once read that the richest 50 people on Earth own something like 90% of the wealth.
I've heard that.
And then there's pollution. So that's a sort of a fairly heavy start to the programme this evening. And we will lift the spirits of the exercise as we move through topics such as the spat that's going on between two old queens of rock stars, Elton and Rod Stewart. Have you come across that?
Yes.
Having a good old bitch at each other, and we're going to get into that a little bit later on. But let's say good evening, first of all, to Seth, who, according to my information, is on the line from Orlando. Is that correct, Seth?
Tommy, yeah. Now, listen, the population business, yeah, rich will get killed. Rich, sorry, will kill poor, the way it is. Been a problem, though, Tommy. I've called you before from Fort Myers. We've moved around a bit, me and the wife, like. But here's the deal. I've been listening to your show, lovely show, but I've got to be honest with you, mate. Somebody's calling in as me.
Ah.
They called the other night.
Yes.
About a week ago, I think it were. Now, listen, Tommy. If that's the case, and you're listening to the... I'm the Seth. If you're listening to the... I'm Seth Dilday from Bogdale originally. But if you're listening to these people, mate, you're complicit.
Yes.
In my identity being stolen. Three words, Tommy. FBI. FBI, Tommy.
Which
three
is,
words.
Yeah.
It's a huge crime here. You know what I mean? Theft. And impersonation is a huge crime here, Tommy. And I just need your help to make sure whoever these people are pretending to be me,
yeah,
stop doing it, Tommy.
You know, Seth, Tommy's ahead of...
The population Seth. Of the planet. But what about my? What about
Seth.
My identity, Tommy?
Tommy's ahead of you. He's way ahead of you. Secure in the knowledge that secure in the knowledge that it was not you, Tommy has sent an imposter to do the show. This isn't Tommy. Tommy's at home listening. I'm Trent Rockwell.
Well, that's what I reckon, Tommy. You've hired somebody to impersonate me to improve your ratings.
My name is Trent Rockwell. I've been a professional
You're
Tommy Boyd impersonator since 1987.
You might as well get the violins out like the bandit.
Seth, thank you for your call. Good try. Low on listening skills. Thought my contribution was a bit better than that. He just carried on.
I know. He was talking.
What a great name Trent Rockwell is, isn't it?
Very 1950s.
Do you think so?
Mm. Silver screen star, Trent Rockwell.
Trent Rockwell.
Lantern-jawed hero.
I like Trent Rockwell. I'm either going to be Trent Rockwell when I come back, or Connor McNamara.
Oh.
It's a hell of a name, that, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Isn't it? Can't you see Connor McNamara standing, looking out across the Atlantic from the tops of an Irish cliff, wearing a duffel coat? Some men can wear duffel coats and most can't.
Mm.
But I would be a Cameron McNamara who looked good in a duffel coat.
Sure, you're a fine-looking fella, Connor.
Yeah, that's the way to put it. That's the way to put it. Our next caller, we'll go to Croydon, and then we'll go to Alan in Birmingham. But let's take in Steve first, who's on the line from Croydon. Hello, Steve.
Oh, hi, Tommy.
Steve.
Yeah, this sustainable development, I've been reading about this for quite some time, and anyone else that's read about it knows it's quite a plan. It's all planned by the globalists. I mean, I don't know if you're aware of a thing called Agenda 21. That's a depopulation of the world. And they're either going to plan it by this coming World War III that a lot of people think is coming. That's why they're all picking on Russia, by the way.
You've been looking at David Icke on YouTube, haven't you?
There's a lot more people than David Icke.
Just saying.
Because we have to go away from the narrative of the mainstream media, see, Tommy? Because the narrative of the mainstream media is all totally Zionist and geared towards the expansion of the greater Israel. Anyway, the reference of the depopulation of the world, it's all planned. There's a statue, a monument in Georgia called the Georgia Guidestones.
Right.
And it's got, by a certain year, they want the population down to 500 million. Mm. So that has been erect there, standing there for quite some time now. And it's one of these, you know, New World Order type of people.
Yes.
That have put it up.
Mm. The lizards.
Well, who's put it up there?
The lizards. I've been looking at David Icke as well. The lizards.
So you don't like David Icke then?
Oh, I think David Icke's fantastic. I interviewed him once, in between him being a Leeds United footballer and becoming a New World guru, when he was fairly sensible.
So you don't think anything he says is true, even though everything he said has come true? The Orwellian society we're all practically living in now, with the police states, the 24-hour security, the random security checks.
No.
You don't believe any of that?
No, I don't.
Even though it's happening all the time. The bridges have just got bollards all over them because of the fake terrorism that we're having, set up by the MI5 and Israeli Mossad.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, I'm afraid...
You don't like to hear that because you don't know about it, Tommy, do you?
I do. I know much more than
you
do
about anything. It
embarrasses
you because you just go with the narrative of the boring mainstream media that just put their fake news on that Donald Trump knows about.
No, it's perfectly simple, Steve. What it is perfectly
simple. Research. You're not even like proper journalists, are you?
Well, for one thing, I listen and you don't. You see, I have listening skills.
I just know that you're going to come out of a load of tosh.
You rub it, whereas I listen. At least I've listened to you, but your problem is, from the very short amount of time that I've spent having to listen to you, and I did listen,
you
don't know how to listen.
You're going to face me out as soon as you come out of your tosh.
Because you don't listen.
I don't need to listen to your tosh.
Do you have any understanding?
I've been invited to talk to you to say something.
No, you haven't.
Real.
No, no, no. Who invited you?
Your producer has got more sense than you, for a start.
What, he phoned you up and said, well, would you like to come on? I didn't realise that. Sorry, I stand corrected.
Hello, by the way, I'm the producer. I didn't call you.
No.
Oh, well, someone with a bit more of intelligence.
What is the problem, Steve?
Not you so far, love, but the other one.
Stay there. We'll take a break, Stephen, and then we'll come back to you, because I'm sure we can get to the heart of this problem, and hopefully in a reasonably short amount of time. This is Talk Radio.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Good evening, if it is evening, if you've just joined us. It's Tommy in for Ian Lee. Kath is here and so is Sammy. We'll go back to Steve in just a second in Croydon, if he's had the courage to hold on. Because in the first part of the programme, we were talking about a report from a biologist, Paul Ehrlich, who is saying that civilization as we know it is not going to end but change dramatically over the next couple of decades due to overpopulation, the poor distribution of wealth and also pollution. Those are the three key things that he is highlighting. And that brought Steve to the phone in Croydon. And Steve, just before the commercial break, we were hearing just how aerated you're getting about all of this.
Yeah, well, why not? Because if people like you just want to ridicule all the time and not listen to the narrative that the mainstream media, the Zionist mainstream media have got, then of course. And also, I'm never aware that when you're going to cut me off at any second, so I have to get as much out as I can. No. How long have I got?
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, if you're prepared to turn it into a conversation rather than a sort of Nuremberg-type rant, then you've got as long as you like. But if you're just going to...
Okay, then I'll calm down then, and you can...
You're just going to burble away. Yeah. If you're just going to burble away, and if you're going to use cliches a lot...
Well, let's not wasting this time. What about the Georgia Guidestones? Let's get to the point. Let's cut to the chase then, Tommy.
Stop using cliches for a start. Let's have a conversation. If I was down the pub with somebody who kept going on about cutting to the chase...
You're wasting time, Tommy.
I know exactly what I'm doing.
Say something that's mean something.
Listen.
Yeah, go on.
No, I'm asking you to listen.
I'm listening.
Right.
Please come out with something.
No, because I'm listening too, and I'm waiting to find out if I can... what your sort of broad overall point is above and beyond your slight sense of agitation.
Right. Well, as I said before, the depopulation of the world is all planned in a document called Agenda 21. If you do the research, you'll find that out.
No, sorry. When you go down the pub...
And Project for the New
hang
American...
Hang on. Whoa. What happens is, Steve, when you say something and somebody's clearly listened and then they respond to it, you have to listen to their response. Not butt in and start something else. Okay, that's how conversation works.
I'm back at school again. Infant school.
So you are. Because I'm listening. You do need to learn how to have a conversation on the radio anyway. And I
used to not say anything.
And I do sympathise because I've rung phone-in programmes myself just to see what the experience is like. And it is quite stressful waiting to come on and then being with the person and wondering if they're suddenly going to cut you off or make you look stupid. So I do sympathise with all of that, but if we can just calm down, we can possibly get to the heart of what it is that's agitating you, all right?
Right.
As a person, rather than you report things that you've seen. You've mentioned Agenda 21 twice now. Let's leave that to one side, and it's no good telling people to go off and do research. That doesn't work.
Why not?
Why not? Because it's not good phone-in radio. If I sat here now and said to the listener, I'm going to do some research now, so you can go and make a cup of tea and twiddle your fingers for 20 minutes.
The idea is you do the research while you're off the radio and then come back on with some knowledge.
No, that doesn't work either because I'm only here for tonight.
Well, aren't you on again another time? Anyway, let's get to the point then.
That's what I'm trying to get out of you. What is your point, really? Your point, not the point that you've read or seen on a collection of YouTubes or anything like that. What's Steve's point?
What have you got against YouTube or the internet? What's the difference between a book and YouTube? Or the internet and YouTube? Doctors and nurses and people from university get their information from the internet.
Let's try it one more time. In your own words, what is eating you?
What is eating me is all the, I'll tell you what's eating me, since 9/11, all the false flags and hoax state-run terror productions organised by MI5, the CIA, and Israeli Mossad, whose motto is...
See, Steve, if I may, this is boring.
By deception,
this is boring. If you're going to be on a phone-in programme, you've got to be interesting and
A bit of a geezer then?
No.
Should I talk about a bit of a geezer about a load of tosh?
No.
Is that what you want?
No. Would you like me to tell you what I want rather
than... Chelsea.
Would you like me to tell you what I want rather than you try and guess? Yes,
well,
of course you would. So
I've
what
never
I'd like...
had this problem with anyone else. It must be you. But carry on.
Oh, thank you. I will. What I'm trying to find is the human being behind all this propaganda that you've got at the front of your brain.
I'll tell you what the human being is.
Yes.
The human being is the ex-forces guy, like many of the other ex-forces.
Ah, so where did you serve? Where did you see? Okay, so which branch of the services did you serve in?
I served in the army, so start ridiculing that when you want, and to ask me what regiment or whatever.
No,
but it doesn't matter really.
No, but did you see action, or were you?
Of course, I did.
Where did you see action?
Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Cyprus.
Germany.
Okay. So anyway.
Not anyway at all. What I'm doing as a friend is just trying to get to the seat of your agitation. And I suspect that having seen some things that most people haven't and wouldn't want to is one reason why you find yourself perhaps a little bit stressed out.
Right. Can I just say about like Northern Ireland, for instance, we had 38 years of the IRA doing a campaign in England, of Great Britain, I should say. And when a bomb went off, we knew it was the IRA. Even though they left a coded warning, the bricks and mortar was strewn across the road, and you knew it was a bomb. Guildford, Manchester, all the rest of it, you know? But when you get a so-called pop of balloons now in the Manchester, like for a Manchester arena or something like that, and they're trying to tell you it's a bomb, and the lights didn't even go out, you know, no dust, no smoke, no nothing. A lot of ex-forces, politicians, ex-CIA and that, they're getting a bit agitated like me with lies. Mm. There's a lot of lies going on.
I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine it would scarcely be possible for somebody who had seen action and who had witnessed, perhaps, I don't know whether you have or haven't, the effects of terrorist activity firsthand, or at least been very close to them in that your colleagues had and reported it back to you, I think it would be almost impossible to, for example, today and yesterday, when there was a lot of media coverage of the 12-month anniversary of the Westminster Bridge, I think it was, and there's always talk, of course, about the terrible things that happened in Manchester just not that long ago, and you've got what happened in France today. I would have thought it would not be possible for someone who's been through what you've been through not to find themselves knocked slightly sideways by all of that.
No, because we can see the truth. We know that the false flag, if anyone wants to look that up, goes on all the time.
No, Steve, I'm not talking about that. Steve, I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, but all right, let's take Westminster Bridge, yeah?
No, let's take Steve. No, let's take Steve. This is what we're talking about, is you.
Why do you want to know about me? I thought you wanted me to ring up about a subject. The subject of was depopulation of the world. I can talk about Russia if you like.
No, thanks.
Steve, ex-forces from many years ago.
Yes, and somebody...
You know, what else do you want to know?
I think we're getting where we want to be and finding out what we need to know. And I hope
the reason I'm agitated is because there's all these lies going on at the moment. Not at the moment, since 9/11, via the mainstream media. The mainstream media is run at the top, if you didn't know, Tommy, by Zionists with an agenda for the expansion of the greater Israel.
All right, I've just got one last question to ask you, Steve. Steve, please don't bang on any more about these theories. They give you some
it's
comfort.
It's not a theory.
Steve, what I'm asking you is this. Are you aware that this material that you're talking about does actually, in some way, shape or form, give you some kind of comfort, even though you present it as being a source of agitation?
How could it possibly give me comfort? Are we actually on air with this? Because I'd love to get people that actually... Well, most people would agree. We'd probably get people on that are just like fruit blimmin' sheep with the mainstream agenda.
Now, listen, I'll tell you what. There's a lot of callers lined up, and I'm going to move on to the next caller. Not because I'm censoring you, but what's going to happen...
No,
I don't want to know any more about the lizards or the conspiracies
or
anything like that.
I've not mentioned lizards.
No, fine. I don't want to know any more about any of that. What I want to know is whether or not you realise or feel that somebody at least has tried to be affectionate towards you?
I don't need any affection, Tommy. Okay.
Steve, thanks for your call. All right, mate, thanks for your call. No. No. You see what I was sort of barking at there, really, a little bit?
Mm.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's all what the mainstream media does, isn't it? It's all tricks.
I know, but isn't that comforting?
Yeah.
I get some comfort out of conspiracy theories.
Yeah. It must be nice to know the truth when everyone else is blinkered.
That's the thing. Nobody else knows. Only me. I'm the only one who's got the insight. And the mainstream media, they're the enemy. The enemy is everywhere.
And you would say that.
The enemy is everywhere. You're the enemy, Kath. You're mainstream media.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Wonder if he knows who owns this radio station.
It's, does anyone know who owns everything? Somewhere there's somebody who owns everything. This is my current conspiracy theory. One bloke it is. Probably is a bloke too. Not being sexy. It'd be nice if it was a woman, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Are there any women amongst the super rich? There are, aren't there? Isn't that woman whose family invented the waxed carton?
Oh, Tetra Pak.
Tetra Pak. Isn't she about the third richest person on earth? Even though she didn't actually invent it.
No.
I got to know this bloke whose grandfather invented the photocopier. And he was pretty wealthy, but very ordinary and down to earth. And he said to me, the advice I give everyone is to choose your grandparents very carefully. Let's rush to Andre in Essex.
Hi, Tommy.
Online too. Hello, Andre.
Yeah, very nice, Tommy. Yeah, you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was going to say something. I don't know if you remember this, but it's about the end of the world and all that. But do you remember the people who used to go around with placards?
Yes.
Like, the end is nigh and the world's going to end tomorrow and all that.
The end is nigh.
Ah, what a classic.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember them? Because they used to come up sometimes, like, normally hippies, weren't they, yeah? And,
No. Sometimes old, gaunt-looking men. Gaunt old men.
Now, if they come up to you and say, look, the world's going to end tomorrow, you know, I always used to go up to them and say, no, it's not. Like, because it was normally when I was on holiday and stuff like that, yeah? Like in this country. And they said, yeah, the world's going to end tomorrow. I say, no, it's not. I'm going surfing tomorrow. I'm going nightclubbing tonight until the early hours and all that. So it's definitely not going to end.
It's a very, say, yes, well, yes.
And you know what I mean? So,
what would you do if you had 24 hours, Andre?
Wait for the Big Bang. No.
What would you do? Supposing we had 24 hours. I'd just get my family together and... I don't really want to think about it, having raised it. So let's move on quickly, shall we?
But do you remember them, though? You don't see them now, do you?
No. I remember Jimmy Greaves, who's not well now. Great man, Jimmy Greaves, the footballer. Very funny man.
Yeah, I know, and he was.
He used to present the evening magazine news programme in Birmingham, so on Central TV. And he was very funny and occasionally crossed the line. And one day it was his job to back announce a report, an interview with a man who was going on about the end of the world is nigh, and it's all going to end tomorrow. And you know, that's Jimmy Greaves is a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And so...
He was a good footballer, but he liked to drink as well, yeah.
Yeah. So the presenter said to him off the back of the report, which said that the world was going to end tomorrow, so, Jimmy, the world's going to end tomorrow. What are you going to do? And Jimmy just went, and he got into trouble for it, he just went, well, I think I'll go and get pissed.
Well, I think I'd probably have a little, swift half, wouldn't you, Tommy?
Would I want to be completely inebriated when the world ended? No, not if I was with my family, because I'd want to see them through it.
No,
but if I was on my own...
I'm not saying a bottle of blue and whiskey, a swift half or something, you know what I mean? Just live now.
Swift half's no good if the world's ending, is it? You've got to go down to the bottom of a bottle of Teachers, haven't you, really?
It depends what half it was. It depends how big the glass was and what it was.
True enough.
You know, what I was going to say, if the end was going to close tonight, or finish tonight, Tommy, yeah?
Yes, yes.
And there's any nice women listening, give us a buzz, because there might be the Big Bang later for me, yeah?
I know, we do tend to think to ourselves, I'm afraid most people do tend to think to themselves, if the world were to end in 24 hours, I would want to have sex once, one last time. It crosses your mind.
What if it was hugely disappointing?
Never hugely disappointing.
Tommy, if the world didn't end, you'd be on a winner, wouldn't you? Yeah?
I'm just going to come back to Kath about the idea of hugely disappointing sex at some point in the programme. Or maybe not.
Say, yeah, you could say I'll see you again tomorrow night.
Andre,
the world might be ending again.
It might. Thank you for your call, Andre, and your good humour and your bringing up the idea that it's possible. Well, I'll tell you what, Kath, if you were having sex because the world is going to end in 24 hours and it was unsatisfactory,
yeah,
wouldn't you go around again?
Well, so much to do, really.
0344 499 1000 is the switchboard number. You can text 8722, start your message with Talk, or you can tweet at Talk Radio. This is Tommy in for Ian Lee. He's back on Monday.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Looking back at some of the news stories of the week and also some of the more obscure but interesting ones from today. And the eminent biologist Paul Ehrlich has predicted that civilization as we know it has only got another one or two decades to go thanks to overpopulation, poor distribution of wealth and pollution. We're also going to be talking about, and this is kind of interesting, just before we go to Nigel, Kath, a woman was arrested in Sheffield because she turned up to protest about a tree being cut down, and she had with her a small toy trumpet, and she blew it. And can we fade up my laptop by any chance, Sam, so that we can hear this? Because I've got the... the video here, just let me find, here we are. Now this is a police officer telling her that somebody has complained because she's tooted her little toy plastic trumpet. He's told her not to do it again. So he said, if you continue, you will be arrested. So she blows her little trumpet like that.
Of course she does.
And the copper says, if you do that one more time, you'll be arrested. So she's saying, go on then, arrest me. And then she does it again. The policeman's walked off now. They're cutting... And he comes over and arrests her. All right, you're arrested.
Outrageous.
Unbelievable.
You can barely hear it over the sound of the trees being cut down.
Exactly.
But she's the one creating the sound noise, sound nuisance.
Right, but that little news snippet there reinforces a piece of wisdom that I was told by the skinheads who supported Fulham. When I used to go along to watch Fulham, I wasn't a skinhead, but these were men of the world, these skinheads. And one of the things they told me was never quarrel with a policeman with a beard.
Ah.
They said they're the worst. And I said, but why? And they went, we don't know. But they are. A bearded copper is definitely more authoritarian than a shaven copper.
He was quite young, wasn't he, underneath that beard?
He was. Yeah, it was a wispy beard. We saw it. Frustrating for you listening, but it's on YouTube if you want to. YouTube, Sheffield tree protest, woman toy trumpet. Irish.
Careful.
You. Okay. Nigel is on line 4, and Nigel wants to sing us a song. Nigel, in your own time.
Hi, Tommy. How are you?
In your own time. Away you go.
Oh, do you want me to go at Bashan with you straight away? Can we have a chat afterwards? It's only a short song.
Okay, well, it'll only be a short chat, but yeah, go on then.
Well, yeah, after this is called Nigel's Time. I'm bringing out on iTunes pretty soon. Okay, here we go. Right. Nigel's Time. Calling up, talking to the nation, sing a song melody for your adoration. Late night phone-ins, I'm keeping you awake. It's our time to shine. Up all night, it's entertainment time. It's our time to sing another rhyme.
Quite a nice voice, actually.
Yeah, he's not a bad singer.
It's Nigel's time.
Okay, Nigel, come back.
Pull out the gun, sun is up, up on your horizon. Safe at home, back on the phone, to my radio station, late night.
Horizon
phone.
Doesn't rhyme with station.
I'm keeping you awake. It's our time to shine.
Okay.
Up all night, it's entertainment time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's our time to sing another line. Oh, 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 yeah, yeah. It's Nigel's. It's Nigel's. Time to call and make my point. Time to play and rock this joint. My life's exciting.
Time to smoke a joint.
Rock this joint.
Oh.
Can you not feel the joint rocking?
Smoke a joint would be a better line. Does need sharpening up the lyrics a bit, doesn't it? Needs a bit more edge. Okay. All right, Nigel, come back now. Got it now, Nigel, come back. Fade him out. We'll come back when he's stopped. That's it. Needs a bit more edge, doesn't it?
Well,
first of all, he needs to think about his whole image, his name, Nigel. Nothing wrong with Nigel. Is he gone? Is he stuck? Okay, Nigel, you're back. Yeah, okay.
Did you like that one?
Actually, I think you've got a nice voice. I haven't heard you before. Kath and Sam have heard you before.
Yeah.
I haven't heard you before. You've got a nice voice.
I think you need to
sharpen the song up a little bit. Give it a bit of edge.
I've signed up to a record company now, and they're going to produce my the proper records. That's only a demo. So I was singing to a demo tape.
I realise that, if you're asking me, I think you need to give this song a little bit more edge somehow.
Yeah, but the original thing, someone's going to put them onto iTunes for me anyway, basically to see what happens.
Would you think about cutting out the yeah, yeah, yeah? Because I think that's very dated.
Oh, the original ones, that's not on it, no.
You don't do yeah, yeah, yeah on the original?
No, that's not. No. It's
also, horizon is a good word, but nothing rhymes with it. So when you hear the end of a line and it ends horizon, and then the singer goes into the next line, you think, what's he going to rhyme it with? Because it doesn't rhyme with station, really.
No, the finished version is much better than that, which is on YouTube, and someone's going to try and put it onto iTunes for me, which is good. And I've signed it, and he's going to write me some other songs as well.
Well, good luck with that, Nigel. Good luck.
Yeah. Can I ask you something very quickly? I used to watch you on a Magpie. Hello?
Well, that's not really a question.
Yeah, but Magpie, I'm sure you was on Magpie, wasn't you, Tommy?
If that's a question, then yes, I was.
Yes, I can't believe it, because I you can't be that old, though. You're not 70, are you?
I'm 91. Like Don Imus. He retired this week.
No, but anyway, you're timeless, because you don't look your age.
No, I don't. Nor do I act it.
You've got curly hair like me, haven't you?
Not anymore, no, Nigel.
Oh. Okay, God bless you.
God bless you, Nigel. Okay, that was kind of interesting. Is listening going out of fashion? Or is it just when people come on phone-in programmes?
Tonight, it would appear it's been dispensed with.
Yeah. Do they teach it in schools? They should teach it, shouldn't they? I'm not surprised people leave education unable to listen, because most teachers don't say anything very interesting for about an hour. And so you learn to switch off, don't you, in school? Did you switch off at school when they're droning on up there?
In some lessons, yeah. We used to have one teacher who just used to, every single lesson, take out your pens and exercise books. And we just had to write word for word. He would dictate the whole lesson.
And you don't get that hour back, do you? I love that phrase now. You know, you don't get that time back. It's awful. My son told me once, this made me really sad. My youngest son said, I said to him, well, you know, how's it going at school? What are you learning and everything? He said, what we've all learned is how to look as though we're paying attention when we're not, because if the teacher sees that we're not paying attention, then he gets cross with us. And we're not paying attention because it's not possible to pay attention, because it's so boring. I said, well, in what way is it boring? What's a typical lesson then? And he said, well, the teacher stands at the top of the front of the class, looks out of the window and talks for an hour.
Gosh, no eye contact at all.
But he turns back occasionally just to see if everybody's listening, hanging on his every word. As a history teacher.
Gosh.
I know.
And you've got the most interesting subject there.
But how do you teach it? I mean, You're a great teacher, Kath.
Oh, thanks.
And if you were teaching history, which subject or which part of history or which historical figure would you most want to teach?
Well, unfortunately, you can't choose it, can you? You have to go by...
No, but let's assume you can.
All right. Well, go straight in with the Tudors.
Bang! In with those Tudors.
Yeah, they didn't mess around.
So where would you start? They did. What with?
All right, well, let's do Wars of the Roses.
Yeah.
And then up to Henry VIII.
Brilliant.
Soap opera. That's you make fantastic. It relevant.
There's beheadings.
Mm-hmm.
Burnings at the stake.
Yes. Sexual divorces, intrigue.
Sexual intrigue.
The arts.
Anne Boleyn had three nipples.
Mm-hmm. An extra finger.
An extra finger! Do you think that was part of her allure for Henry? A woman with six fingers?
Here's my theory.
Go on.
I don't think she had an extra anything. I think that was something that was used against her afterwards.
They made it up?
Yeah, make her sound freakish. He wouldn't have chosen anyone less than perfect, would he? He could have had his pick of everyone.
I think if you've got one less finger, that's not very attractive.
Mm.
But I can easily see how... Because hands are, you know, they're quite evocative, aren't they, hands? You use hands for movements. And if you've got a whole ribbon of six fingers, that's quite mesmerising if you're somebody who uses your hands when you talk.
What, green sleeves?
He didn't
with a hand of bananas on the end.
Did he write that?
Apparently.
I can't.
Took the credit for it, didn't he?
What I'm going to do is say to Yian, who's on the line from South Wales, and also to Adic, Alan, who's also on the line. If you just hang on, we're going to take Julian and then rush to the news. Julian, hold the front page. According to my information, on line three, is a supporter of David Icke.
Yes, Tommy, I've got a conspiracy theory.
Go on then.
I think that guy you phoned up to defend David Icke must have been one of his enemies and wanted to make David Icke come across as bad as he possibly could.
Now, that's a clever piece of thinking, very tactical of you.
It's a false flag operation.
Yes, you do get that, don't you? They do
I think they do.
Yeah.
Well, how was that the first time you heard Nigel? He's been doing it for years.
I don't always pay attention, not even when I'm on.
Oh, I remember. Nigel goes down in history along with Wilfred in County Down.
Yes, there are people, aren't there?
Radio legends.
Phone-in radio legends.
Yeah.
Yes, if I go way back, there was a man
called... He's one of them.
He's one of them. Yes, he is. But I've never heard him before. He does have a lovely voice.
Mm-hmm. He's a nice guy.
He's a very nice guy.
Well, who's the guy you heard of in history?
I had a history teacher who was really good. He was a very, very bright bloke, and he said, I'm not going to teach you history. This was at grammar school, my first year at grammar school. Mm. He said, I'm not going to teach you guys history. You're too young. You don't understand it. You won't understand history till you're about 14. So we'll talk about other things. And then he went, everybody have a think. What's your favourite film? We were right in. Right in.
Nice
sucked
one.
Us, he drew us into us like that, but he started to teach us history through films. So I think I stuck my hand up and I said something like, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Sir. And that's like sort of historical, isn't it? Because it's a cowboy thing.
Yeah.
It's the Wild West and it's democratisation of an uncivilised part of the world.
Did you know that the Wild West era only lasted 20 years?
I did not know that.
Isn't that crazy?
It is, and all those movies.
The amount of attention it gets.
Julian, are you a spent force or can you survive through the news and come back?
Yeah, I'll survive, Tommy. I'm a survivor.
Okay. You hang in there then. Good evening, this is Talk Radio. I'm Tommy. Sam is here and so is Kath, and here's the news.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We're keeping Julian warm and rushing to Mo, who is our next caller. Good evening, Mo.
Hello, Tommy.
Hello.
I just found your comments earlier very offensive about teachers, calling your son's teacher boring. You do realise that that teacher educates your son, and without that teacher, your son would have no education. So why would you throw offensive comments on the people that teach us and the people that give us education?
Because a lot of teachers deserve to have remarks like that made about them. A lot of teachers are very lax.
A lot of teachers, yeah.
Yes, a lot of teachers are very poor. Very poor indeed.
Yeah. But without teachers, you wouldn't be there. You wouldn't be on the radio station. Without teachers...
Without teachers, I wouldn't be on the radio station. I don't think I've ever heard a bigger load of rubbish in my life, Mo. I mean, try and say something more stupid than that. I dare you. Without teachers, I wouldn't be on the radio. I dare you to think of anything dafter than what you just said.
So you don't believe that teachers give... What do you believe that teachers give this country? They give this country education. They educate us. And why would you throw offensive comments saying that a lot of teachers are boring?
What do you
why
know about teaching?
Well, my teachers educated me.
What do you know about teaching?
I find it very offensive that you threw those comments about teachers. You can't, Tommy.
What do you know about teaching? Do you have a degree in education?
I said, but my teachers educated me.
Do you have a degree in education?
But yes, I do.
Do you have a degree in education?
I'm studying my A-levels now, Tommy. I'm studying my A-levels now, and I would find that very offensive.
Do you know anybody who has a degree in? Do you know anybody who has a degree in the theory of education?
What do you define as a degree, Tommy? Do you define A-level as a degree? What do you define as a degree?
No, funnily enough, I don't define an A-level as a degree. I'll ask you the question the last time. I'm not sure about the calibre of the teaching that you've been receiving, Mo, if you can't actually keep up with a simple conversation like this. Do you know anybody, have you ever met anybody, who is a qualified lecturer in the theory of education, which is what we're talking about?
My teachers, yes. My teachers have a degree, thank you very much, Tommy.
And have you ever spoken to them about the theory of education?
The theory of education.
Yes, this is what you phoned up about. You phoned up about the theory of education.
My point that I'm making, don't cut me off now. I know you're going to cut me off. My point is that my teachers have provided me with great education. They provided.
I'm not going to cut you off, Mo, until I'm not going to cut you off, Mo, until you are showing sufficient listening skills to respond appropriately when I tell you that I am a qualified lecturer in the theory of education.
And you count yourself as boring, Tommy. Would you
exactly.
find it offending if I called
no.
you boring?
No, and why am I not boring? Because I'm not in a classroom.
But why would you offend the people that educate us? They educate us. They're the people that educate children.
No, I don't agree. As somebody who is qualified to opine on the subject of the theory of education, Mo, I am here to tell you that most of what goes on in schools is not education.
Why do you think that?
Because the main reason that we have the education system that we have is to prepare young men to go and fight in wars. And if you don't believe me, get a copy, and you can do it on the internet, of the 1944 Education Act, which has remained unchanged on the statute book to this day. And which was created... I'm going to finish, so be quiet.
Finish? Yeah, I'm going to be quiet.
Yeah, and I bet you're not listening. You're mentally rehearsing what you're going to say next. Aren't you?
I'm listening.
I'll be the judge of that, whether you listened or not. I'll be the judge of whether you listened or not, okay?
You can be the judge, don't worry.
I will. The 1944 Education Act, which has shaped all of the state education that we have in this country from 1944 until 2018, was constructed not by educationalists, not even by politicians. Would you like to know who drew it up?
By who?
The generals of the Allied countries during the Second World War, who went to the cabinet and said, "We are not going to be able to defeat Hitler, because all the nation's young men don't know how to obey orders. They don't know how to march towards the sound of gunfire on being ordered. They don't know how to wear a uniform. So we need an education system that teaches them blind obedience to authority and how to look good all wearing the same clothes." That was the sole agenda of that Education Act. And the remnants of those purposes are all that is retained in the secondary education of England and Wales. I obviate Scotland from that because they have their own and much superior system.
Can I answer, please?
Yeah, your turn, Mo. You have a good... You'd never try and be as good as that. Go on, mate. Off you go.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Tommy. Thank you very much. Tommy, we are not in 1944. We are in 2018, and I am sure that my teachers want to educate me. That's their main purpose. They don't want to teach me how to go to war. Are you serious? Their main purpose is to educate me.
Yes. Have you read the 1944 Education Act?
Sorry?
Have you read the 1944 Education Act?
I haven't. I'm not. I don't care about.
Can you quote? Can you quote me? Can you quote me any? Can you quote me any statutory changes to that?
You're interrupting me.
Yes, that's because you're not actually staying on track. You're waffling.
Tommy, listen. I'm not talking about education. I'm talking about teachers. I'm talking about.
Wait. Just go back. Just go back. Go back there a second. You're not talking about teaching. You're talking about education. You're not talking about education.
I'm not talking about education. I'm talking about teachers.
I've got you, Mo. I've got you. You're feeling guilty because you heard somebody say something that was rude about teachers, and you're worried that it makes you look like a bad student if you don't stand up for them. That's your psychology.
No, I don't care about how it makes me look. I'm just talking about what's right and what's wrong. You can't call people who put in effort. I see the teachers. I see they come in 5 a.m. to educate us, Tommy, to educate us. And for you to call them boring, I feel that you have no respect to people who get 25 to 30 grand a year, who come 6 a.m. to educate children. I don't feel you have the respect.
You're absolutely right. I don't.
And why do you lack that respect, Tommy? You're on the radio. You're a role model to us, Tommy. You're a role model to young kids.
I certainly hope I'm not a role model. I don't set myself up as a role model.
On the radio. You're on the radio. People are listening to you, aren't they? Young kids are listening to you, and now they're going to follow your idea.
Oh, Mo, you're really incredibly stupid if you think that people are going to lift my views and adopt them. They actually tend to do the opposite.
Well, you're actually on the radio, Tommy. I forgot to tell you. You're on the radio. You're a role model. Like anybody on TV.
This is loose stuff, Mo. Weak stuff. Really. Clichés, most of it.
Clichés, yeah. That's what you say to everyone, isn't it? Anybody who disagrees with you.
No, everybody who uses clichés, Mo.
Yeah, very funny.
What are you going to do when you get your A-levels? You're going to be a teacher?
My A-levels and my B-techs? No, I'm not going to be. I'm not good enough to be a teacher.
That's a very cheesy thing to say. You're sucking up to somebody who you hope might be listening, aren't you?
I'm not. I'm just defending people.
You want to be able to go into school and say to your teacher on Monday morning, guess what I did, sir? I went in on the radio and I defended you, sir, because this man said that you were lazy and you were only thinking about your pension and you weren't very fair and you weren't able to amuse and interest and stimulate.
People work hard. You're not thinking of the point.
Everybody works hard, Mo. Listen, mate, you're too young. You're too young to realise something, Mo, and I'm going to tell you it now. And welcome to the rest of your life. Everybody who works, works too hard. Everybody. You'll find that out for yourself later. One day you'll be lying in bed, a broken 27-year-old man, and you'll think to yourself, that old fool on the radio, he was right when he said everybody works too hard. So don't tell me that teachers are special because they work too hard. Of course they work too hard. Tell me somebody who doesn't work too hard and get paid too less.
Teachers who work hard, Tommy. Why are you disrespecting teachers who work hard?
Because most teachers are simply...
They work hard to give us education. They're selfless.
No.
That's what they are. They're selfless.
No. I'm going to tell you several reasons why teachers could actually do a better job.
Why can they do a better job, Tommy? I'd love to hear. I'm going to listen now. I'm going to shut up and I'm going to listen.
Okay, let me take one point for you. One point. Here we go. Try this one. Can you think of how many sections of society are required by law to be in a certain place all day long? By law. And they're breaking the law if they're not there.
Well, obviously.
How many sections of society can you think of who are subject to that?
Well, many.
Two. Two.
Doctors and teachers, I think.
Two.
Doctors and policemen, what?
Two.
Yeah?
Convicted criminals who've been sentenced to prison and children.
Okay. What do you want me to answer to that? Like,
that's your job to think of what to say, mate. I'm not telling you what to say. You go and then you think of something good to say. Go on.
I'm going to tell you something good to say. Why? Well, obviously, because these kids need to get an education. Because if they don't get an education, they're going to be on the streets. They're going to... And that's why you see people with knives, because they didn't get an education. Teachers teach kids how to keep off the streets, how to be safe at all times. And now you're disrespecting them by calling them boring, Tommy. These teachers are role models to your kids, to my brothers, and to every kid in this country. They're role models. They keep us safe. They teach us how to be safe, Tommy.
Well, they're not doing a very good job then, are they, Mo, really?
Well, they're not. You're very disrespectful, Tommy, aren't you?
I know more than you do, Mo.
Yeah, obviously, Tommy, obviously.
That's listen, let's talk about... Let's talk
you
about...
know more than me, but you all disrespect right. teachers. You
well,
know more than
hold
me.
On a, hold on a second. Let's just try something else, shall we?
Try something else then, Tommy.
All right. What do you think my profession is?
You're a radio presenter, aren't you?
No, try again. What's my profession?
Your profession?
Yes.
I didn't study your... I never
have a guess.
You.
Go on, have a
first
guess.
I've never heard of you.
Have a guess. What do you think my profession is?
What? You're a radio presenter. That's what your profession is.
No, that's what I do for a living. But what's my profession? My professional qualification? What do you think my profession is?
I have no idea what's your profession.
Have a guess in the context of this conversation. What do you think it is?
Education.
Keep going. I'm a
teacher. What?
Teacher. Well done, Mo. Right. Next question for you. Next question for you. What do you think my wife's profession might be?
She's a teacher.
Well done. I haven't finished. What do you think is the profession of both of my sons?
They're teachers. But why?
Okay. Haven't finished. What do you think my mum's profession was?
She's a teacher.
She's a head teacher. What do you think is the profession of both my cousins on my mum's side of the family, Mo? Is it getting interesting, this, isn't it? It's getting kind of interesting, this, isn't it? And you're saying I disrespect them. What do you think is the profession of both my aunts and my uncle? What do you think, Mo?
They're teachers, Mo.
So, on a scale of 1 to 10, when it comes to knowing about teachers, let's call me an 11. Where are you?
Well, I'm a zero.
You certainly are.
I'd
actually say less than zero, Mo. Now, here's the final thing that I've got for you, Mo. What have you learned in this last 10 minutes?
That the Education Act teaches... I don't know. I can't even know. I don't think I learn anything, to be honest, Tommy.
No, I don't think you ever do really learn anything, because when your teachers are talking, you're not listening to them. You're thinking of the thing that you're going to say next, which is... it's a common fault amongst the young, Mo, but I got rid of it a long time ago. I listen.
That's well done to you.
And well done to you. Thanks for your call. What have I learned from you?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say. I'll keep it to myself.
Okay, Tommy.
Is that all right?
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye-bye, Tommy.
Bye-bye, Mo. What time is it? It's 11:15. That was a good workout. Quite a good workout. I'm sorry to have cut you out of that.
No, I was enjoying it. I was thoroughly enjoying it, yes.
That was a good workout, wasn't it? I feel quite aerobicised now. I want another fight. I can't see anybody on the switchboard who wants a fight now. Do you want to fight with me?
Certainly not. I'm exhausted. Just listening.
Really?
Yes.
Do you want to fight, Sam?
After that display, I don't feel confident in myself to, no.
Can we just have a wrestle? Are you any good at wrestling?
No, but I did want to be a wrestler at one point.
Did you?
Yeah.
Who inspired you to want to be a wrestler?
I don't know. It was back when I didn't know what I was going to be...
WWE, is this, or...?
Lucha Libre.
No, I watched a lot of, New Japan.
Oh, the little guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because look at me. You want to do a bit of that. I'm not exactly the biggest muscle man, so.
No, it doesn't matter. I don't know if you've got a bit of technique. Okay, our number is 03444991000. You can text 87222, start your message with talk. That will cost you 25 pence plus your services charges. Or you can tweet, it's @talkradio.
across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Kath and I were talking about education whilst we were listening to those important messages. And I was saying, when I trained to be a teacher, one of our education lecturers told us something that stayed with me all my life. He said, when you go into schools to do a teaching practice, one of the older members of the staff will sidle up to you and boast that they have been in education for 30 years. They haven't. They've been in education for 1 year, 30 years over. Which I thought was liberating, coming from somebody who was teaching us what education could be in the right hands. Let's take a few calls. We'll go quickly back to Julian, who is a sometimes supporter of David Icke, who got a bit of a pasting in the first hour of this programme. Hello, Julian, again.
Yeah, thanks for letting me back in, Tommy. I'm actually a teacher as well. And I think that Mo was just trying to be a nice guy.
Yeah.
Having done supply around different places, you always hear kids say, oh, sir, Mr. So-and-so is a really rubbish teacher. And even when I don't know who that is, I immediately sort of defend them and say, look, anyone who gets into teaching does it for a good reason and they want to help children and you should show some respect, blah, blah, blah. But I know they've got a point. There are terrible teachers out there, like you said.
Yeah, there are. Simple as that.
And yeah, pretty much. I don't want to fall out with you.
No. Whenever I hear the word supply, I'm reminded that Specsavers have taken over one of the great jokes with the supplies ad. Have you seen that one?
No.
Supplies?
It's not a racist Chinese joke, is it?
Yes, it is. As it was originally, it is a slightly racist Chinese joke.
It is. I was saying that tongue-in-cheek, but it is.
It is. In its original form, he signs up for the army, and they tell him that he's not big enough to fight, so they're going to put him in charge of supplies. And then they never see him for nearly a year.
Racial stereotype.
So they start, they send out search parties around the camp for him. Mm. And eventually they find him hiding in a crate at the back of a warehouse.
And
he jumps up and he goes, supplies. And Specsavers have nicked it.
Interesting. It's funny what you can get away with and what you can't get away with and who you can poke fun at.
Can they get away with it?
They have, because they've removed the nationalistic angle to it. And the joke becomes something to do with... it becomes a visual rather than an accent-based joke. Yes. It doesn't work. Funny joke, though.
Well, it relies on you knowing the original joke, I guess.
I think to a large extent, yes. Yes, but it's quite funny when the clown goes, and waves when the chap's on the radio saying that what they wanted was supplies. Anyway, Julian, thanks for your call, and thank you for hanging on. Appreciate that. Where should we go next? It looks to me as though Gavin is our next caller in Bishop's Stratford.
Stortford.
Stortford in Hertfordshire. Specsavers. Hello, Gavin.
Hello, Tommy. How are you doing, man?
Yeah, good, thank you. You?
Beautiful. Yeah, I was going to take up your offer for a fight, but I've lost my bottle.
Yeah, well, where does that phrase come from? You know, you lose your
bottle.
I
know that one. Yeah, that's easy.
Go on, then.
Well, it's the same as Harris. It's your bottle and glass.
Yes.
And you go on from there, and you've lost that bit of you. It goes, you know?
What bit of you have you lost? Your bottom?
Yeah, your bowels go. You've lost your bottle. Your bottle and glass.
Yeah, but that's not rhyming slang for bowels, though, is it?
No, you see, right.
How can bottle come to mean courage?
Yeah, when your arse goes, like you're scared.
I know that rhyming slang is a double rhyming slang, isn't it? But Aristotle.
Yeah, it is. It gets convoluted, yeah.
It's Aristotle bottle.
Yep. Bottle and
so
glass.
So it's Aris. And so you lost your aris.
Yeah, that means your backside.
Yeah, get your aris out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, got that.
Yeah, so when it goes, that means you're frightened and you're afraid. And
I know what it means, but I just can't see the connection. But anyway, let's move swiftly
on. Yeah. How about this for an idea, just to kick around for a minute or two?
Yep.
If there was a child to be born, and I've chosen this deliberately to avoid going down the famous, you know, if an alien was to see our planet, what would it think? I think it'd be more interesting to look at it. If there's a newborn child that was taking its perception of our planet, they would come to see that there was no God, but only religions.
Well, aside from the fact that every newborn child does indeed actually have the opportunity to do that, whereas to the best of our knowledge, no alien ever has.
Yeah, that's kind of why I went down that one.
I understand. So, what you're saying is there is no God, but religion has a place? Is that your point?
No, it's kind of the convex of that. It's if there is an innate creator of everything, or there is a superpower or a beardy man up in the sky, that should be an innate part of us. But anybody looking at it from a fresh point of view would just see all these different religions, and they'd think, where's God in all this? There is no God, there's only religions, is what I think they'd see.
So what is God then supposed to be? If you're... Kath, could you pretend to be religious?
Go on.
All right, Kath, how's it going? Sorry.
That's
really
right.
Rude of me.
No, that's all right.
What religion are you at the moment?
I'm not.
But if you were pretending
to be... Oh, in my imagination.
Buddhist or...
Yeah, I'll be a Buddhist.
Be a Buddhist.
That's not really a religion, is it? It's more of a philosophy.
It is more of a faith. Yeah.
All right, so All right, well, let me go... well, Christian, that's the nearest one I can get to.
Yeah, do that.
Go on.
Hello.
Hi.
My Christian friend.
Peace be with you.
She sings a praise on Sunday.
And on to you.
Of course I did. I was in it.
It was good. I think it was good. Good show, I thought.
Excellent.
Yeah, lots of good singing. Everyone was really exercising their mouth. Who's God?
Who's God? God is love.
God is love.
Okay, then, Christian, Kath. Why have you got the hump with all the other people that don't believe in your God?
I don't.
Yeah, you do. Well,
some Christians
do. They're not worthy and all that.
This Christian doesn't.
Some Christians.
This Christian believes in an ever-loving God, and maybe this is just our best guess from our perspective.
Okay, Christian, Kath, why aren't you happy with them other people believing in their God?
You're making a lot of assumptions about me, young man.
I'm just taking you on being Christian, Kath.
Yeah, but there are plenty of Christians that don't dislike other religions.
Name one.
Mike.
All right, then I'll counteract you with Paul.
There's always a Paul.
Paul is a bit dicey. No, if you're a committed Christian...
No.
You have to denounce... It's you can't worship any other God except me, kind of scene.
Yeah, but you're suggesting that it's a different God. If there's only one God...
Yes.
But you're claiming it to be the right one.
No, there is only one God, and then everyone else approaches it from their different perspectives. They're not suggesting it's a different person or a different entity, are they?
So why do you want them all to join your gang? Why can't you go and join their gang?
I don't. God gave us free will. I can make his own. You can make your own choices.
She's doing a good job here, you know.
But if it's a case of free choice, then shouldn't it fundamentally come down to the place when everybody actually agrees on what God is and wants us to do, and then branches off rather than
saying... They pretty much have, haven't they? In most religions, God is the ultimate power and the one that generates all the love and the thing we should aspire to be.
Jehovah's look at it quite like that.
Oh, they do?
No, I've met some moody old Jehovah's, and they take a very circumspect view of the whole ascendancy. I don't think they believe in the Holy Trinity so much.
No, they don't, but they believe in God. You're not talking about the Holy Trinity. That's dogma. We're talking about the ultimate creator, aren't we?
Right. So if there is an ultimate creator, why has it got dissipated into so many rival gangs that want to smash the others to bits until they all believe the same thing?
Culture and geography.
Or just steadfast belief systems that won't allow two of them to coexist at the same time, it would seem.
Do you know that... Judaism, Christianity, and Islam have all...
They're all the same mob, really, aren't they?
They're all of the book. They all fundamentally, within their teachings, they suggest you should respect each other's book because it overlaps.
If you don't call the governor the right name, they get the hump.
It's all bottles and humps with you, isn't it?
Yeah.
They do. They get all angry if you don't call God by the right... I'm sure God...
I get very uncomfortable with people who use the word they and make assumptions like you do.
I'm being very presumptuous.
You are.
All right. Believers, can I use that instead of they?
Can I tell the great Emo Phillips Edinburgh Festival best joke ever on this subject? Kath?
I stand up to comedians, man. Go for it.
Here we go. Right. Do you know who Emo Phillips
is? Yeah.
You do. I can't do the voice. I'll try.
Okay, man.
Once I saw this guy on a bridge about to jump, and I said, don't do it. He said, nobody loves me. I said, God loves you. Do you believe in God? He said, yes. I said, are you a Christian or a Jew? He said, a Christian. I said, me too. Are you Protestant or Catholic? He said, Protestant. I said, me too. What franchise? He said, Baptist. I said, me too. Northern Baptist or Southern Baptist? He said, Northern Baptist. I said, me too. Northern Conservative Baptist or Northern Liberal Baptist? He said, Northern Conservative Baptist. I said, me too. Northern Conservative Baptist Great Lakes region or Northern Conservative Baptist Eastern region? And he said, Northern Conservative Baptist Great Lakes region. I said, me too. Northern Conservative Baptist Great Lakes Region Council of 1879 or Northern Conservative Baptist Great Lakes Region Council of 1912? He said, Northern Conservative Baptist Great Lakes Region Council of 1912. I said, die, heretic, and I pushed him off.
Well done, Tommy. Seriously, man, well done.
Cracking, isn't that gagging a bit?
The voice could have been a little bit higher, a little bit more whiny, but yeah, that's all right, man.
All I will say is that it's not a joke I can ever tell without having it written down. I've tried, but I just can't remember all the nuances.
You committed.
Dave's on the line. He wants to come in on this very conversation, so we'll let him. Hello, Dave. We've still got Gavin, haven't we?
All right, man,
yeah. Go on, Dave.
Hi-de-ho. Well done, Kath, by the way. Great Christian.
Thanks.
Where does Gavin get this idea that Christians have to hate other people's religions?
Because they kill loads of people, in the name of it.
No. Religion has nothing to do with God. Religion is people...
That was my beginning point.
Yeah. But the churches nowadays are just greedy and judgmental.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
I must have missed that bit then when I muted to talk to... I'm a Christian. Tommy knows I'm a Christian from long back, don't you, mate?
I do seem to remember that, Dave, if it is the Dave in Hove I remember from the funeral.
Indeed.
Hello.
How you doing?
Never been better. How about you?
Still miss her, but, you know.
Yep.
Life goes on. Any huge? Yes, Kathy, okay?
It's fine. Call me what you like.
Okay, Bridget did a really good job. That's fantastic. But I don't hate other people's religions. You believe what you like. I don't particularly hate atheists or anything.
No, I wasn't talking about you, my friend, as an individual. I was talking about your philosophy.
The thing is, you're talking about my God. Now, my God...
It should be our God, shouldn't it?
Not necessarily, because some people say, like you said, that their God's different to mine. Well, yeah, my God,
God, mate.
No, my
not
God.
Yours, not mine. Everybody's God.
Are you prepared to listen?
Of course, go on.
Thank you. Other people who say to me their God is different to mine, my God, I say to them, is the God of creation. He created all things. Nothing is except he created it. So if your God is different to my God, your God is not God. I never say my God's different to anybody else's. There's only one.
You just said that if you were going on, but if I believe in a God that ain't that, then my God isn't the real one.
Then, yeah, exactly, because you're not believing in God. You're believing in something else.
Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, why not?
You're not supposed to be reasonable. I thought Tommy wanted a fight.
No, man, no, much love. And, yeah, no, not at all. I bottled out of fighting with Tommy. I don't want to fight with anybody else.
Well, Gavin, I've got bad news for you, because people are queuing up to have a fight with you. So, I mean, shall I hold your coat or what?
Put my dueling boots on or whatever.
Dave, thank you for your call. I'll talk to you again sometime soon, I hope.
Yes, nice to talk to you again, mate.
Gavin,
yeah, all the best. Take it easy, man.
Gavin, stay where you are because your next opponent is Yion in South Wales. Hello, Yion. If we can just get you up. Hello, Yion.
I'm Gavin about bullying.
Hello, Yion. You're through to Gavin.
Hello.
Hello,
mate. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Beautiful.
I just wanted to speak to Tommy and Catherine about...
Okay, that's okay.
You can listen if you want. And Catherine knows a bit about me. I ring.
Yeah, right. Go on, man. Yeah, go on.
I ring Catherine and Ian a lot when they're on, and I know Ian doesn't like it. He says he can't understand me, but hey-o, I ring anyway. I don't care what people say. But I've been staying at my friend's lately, and today she's threatened to assault my friends and family and expected me to say nothing. And I left with my £44 charger, because it's a proper Apple one for my phone only. And she was kicking off threatening me, so I rang the police to go down and get it. And then she rang me and said, I've cut the charger up so the police can't take it.
Ian, I'm going to have to interrupt you there, because we're on the wrong page slightly here. My understanding was that you are a Christian and you had a disagreement with Gavin, and that's what I wanted from you. But thank you for all of that background. We'll stay with Gavin.
Okay.
And we'll go to Kevin next, who I think in Stoke-on-Trent, he says he wants enlightening, so perhaps this is another conversation on the fairly important topic of God. Hello, Kevin.
Where is he when I need him?
Hello.
Hello.
Who am I speaking to?
My name's Tom. Gavin is on line 5.
Right,
Kath is here, and so is Seth.
Oh, hello, Tommy and Catherine.
Hello, Kevin.
Is this Tommy?
Yes.
Is Catherine with you?
I am, yes.
Oh, hello, Catherine. How are you, darling?
I'm all right, thanks, Kevin. What did you want to say?
Basically, a few things, really. We've had a few serious subjects talked about tonight, and both yourself and Tommy are very well-educated, and I listened to your call earlier on about the teaching subject. And I was sort of sitting on the fence, listening to both views. Then I listened to your next caller about God. And then I'm thinking, well, where does our planet come from? The planet Earth. I mean, we all know about the dinosaurs and all that. And then I was thinking about, like, Egypt with the pyramids. I mean, let's face it. Without hydraulics and the equipment that we've got now, where did those pyramids come from? And then another topic was that one of our MPs was worried about, like, rocks coming from the likes of the planet Mars and all that. And NASA are on about sending, like, spaceships to Mars to sort these things out. I mean, where did we actually come from?
Is that your question? Have we got to your question? Your question is, where have we come from? Yes?
Is that you, Tommy?
Still is, yes, yes. Sometimes wish it wasn't.
I mean, we all know about Tyrannosaurus Rex and all that.
Do we, though? Do we?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Do we? They've never found anywhere near an intact T-Rex, you know. Just a finger bone here. And a bit of spine there.
Is this something we made up, then?
Do you know how many skeletons of different T-Rexes have been discovered right across planet Earth to date, on which they base the entire Jurassic Park franchise?
No, I don't.
Most of them found in somewhere appropriately called Death Valley, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Have a guess. Mm-hmm. Kath, how many bits of different T-Rexes in all, total number, all the archaeological stuff and digs, tapping away with little hammers and chisels down by the River Delta, which is now dry. Oh, look, there's another one. How many different T-Rexes do you think they might have found?
Right, this feels like a trick question. So
it's not a trick question.
I reckon...
Go high, so it makes my the truth sound a bit more dramatic.
All right, I'll say
127, go on.
127?
Five!
What?
Nice work. See, that's good. That's good sidekicking.
I've been doing this for a while.
That is good sidekicking. You were going to say more than that, weren't you, Sam? You were going to say 300.
Yeah, I was going to go well high.
You were going to say 300 or 400.
I thought you said 127 plus, and Catherine
nope.
said 125.
They've only found tiny little bits of five different T-Rexes. And on the basis
Did
of that...
Really?
Yeah.
Get
so
out of town.
It's all very well, Kevin, you saying we all know about T-Rexes.
Yeah, well,
but it wouldn't stand up in court, mate. It wouldn't stand up in court.
Questions and education. How come when I was at school, we were taught about dinosaurs and Tyrannosaurus Rex
exactly.
being like the major
predator
source? Yeah, predator.
Predator's That's the word, isn't it? Yeah, good film, by the way.
It is.
Much underrated film, that, isn't it? Have you seen it?
I haven't. No.
You should. Everybody should see Predator once. Twice, actually. You've seen Predator, haven't you, Sam?
Really?
I have, yeah.
What a movie.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Well,
I can recollect
has been taught, T-A-U-G-H-T, about it at school. I've not seen the movie. But, I mean, would you not think, Tommy, that maybe where did planet Earth come from?
I take it I'm out of this
somebody outside.
No, you're still there, Gavin. You can jump in any time you want. You can have a go at Kevin. He's going around the houses
a bit. He sounds mellow, man. I'm enjoying his chat.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that there's someone outside of the planet Earth that is, like, more knowledgeable than us?
Well, all I would say, Kevin...
the collective unconsciousness.
Yes, that is what a lot of people are thinking. Kevin, thank you for your call. Gavin...
Yes, mate.
You're doing such a good job. Kath is a bit busy at the minute.
Yes.
I've got to nip to the loo and fill up my water bottle
right.
during the next commercial break.
Yes.
Could you do me a favour? Could you go into the commercial break for me and then pick up at the end of it and I'll tell you when I'm back?
All right, mate.
Well, the commercial's due now, so...
Okay, going to the break with Tommy Boyd and Gav.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Welcome back. It's the Tommy Boyd Show with Kath and your old market Gav. And if you're only going to listen to one thing, make sure you listen to this with both of your ears. It's a beautiful time of the evening when we can all just sit back, relax, and put our little mucky feet in our favourite mucky old slippers. Think about what's happened with your day. Oh, I think about what's going to happen tomorrow. Fortunately, with all my vast radio experience, I'm fully capable and not at all pooing my pants about having to speak to everybody completely on my own. So, this is why they get paid the big bucks, ladies and gentlemen. What I recommend that happens now, in the very, very near future, is Cass or Tommy or even Sam, bless them all, aren't they brilliant, they don't get paid enough, comes and saves me, otherwise I will just have to chat.
Your next caller is Glyn on line 4, Gavin.
Oh, good evening, Glyn.
Hello.
Hello, my friend, how are you, man?
Ah, technical problem, Gavin. You've got to get out of that one, mate.
You've got a pad. It seems that we've lost Glyn there. He was probably thinking too hard, and his brainwaves got caught up in his mobile phone signal. So we'll go to another caller who isn't thinking so hard.
We're trying to get Glyn back for you, Gavin.
Okay, we're trying to get Glyn back here, ladies and gentlemen.
Just throw ahead to a little bit later on.
Later on in the show, I'm going to be talking to... a very short man that envies a tall man's short wife. And I think you'll all find that's quite the conundrum they've got themselves into there, ladies and gentlemen, I really do. Apart from that,
I've got Glyn back for you now, Gavin.
Oh, Glyn's back for me. I shouldn't say that's lacking professionalism. Hello, Glyn.
He's gone again. Shall I pretend to be Glyn?
Yeah, if somebody
not allowed
mind,
to do that. You get in trouble with Ofcom if you pretend to be callers. But I'll be Glyn, right?
All right, yeah, all right. I won't say nothing.
Hello, Gavin.
Hello, Glyn. Oh, what brings you to this little cavalcade of joy?
Well, I just thought I'd like to say that I'm a big fan of yours.
Oh, bless you. Yeah,
it's nice to talk to you again.
Oh, yeah, you too. I remember you from that show in Derbyshire that we did.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm glad you remember
that day.
Yeah. Yeah. And anyway, keep up a good show.
Oh, thanks, Matt. Yeah, you can catch me on Periscope and on YouTube as well now.
Well, we've got the real Glyn back for you now, Gavin.
I'm only joking, Glyn. Glyn, what have you got to say?
I do apologise for cutting myself off.
That's perfectly all right, man. What's on your scene? What's on your mind?
Well, hello to Kath and hello to Jimmy and hello to Gavin.
Oh, well, greetings, man, greetings.
Greetings.
Yes.
First
go on with your bad self.
Quick thing. I can tell you about Specsavers because I'm a spectacle maker by trade.
Oh, really? Do the whole bifocal range of the lot?
Yeah. And I know how Specsavers got away with that. Slightly racist.
Oh, right. Are you allowed to tell us without breaking any specky rules or laws? We're all friends here, man. Spill the beans on this.
Basically, there's a monopoly in this country.
Yeah, that board game. That you build the hotels and the houses on.
£2 billion.
Monopoly. Yeah, I'm with you. Sorry, mate. Sorry, Glenville.
Yeah. They're a spectacle monopoly. They're a £2 billion turnover a year company, and they can just do what they want, which is what this country does.
Right, so they've got so much money, they can just get away with it.
Yeah.
All right.
Essentially.
So, what happens to little independent spectacle vendors then? Do they just go out of business? They get bought up by the bigger markets?
Yeah, people like me, Tommy. I work 15, 16 hours a day trying to make a living.
Oh, right.
And I am a very, very good spectacle maker.
Yeah.
And I it's all I know. That's what I have to do. But anyway.
Can I just jump in with a couple of spectacle jokes?
Of course, caller.
That's a different story for a different day if you really want to know about it. You've inspired me tonight, Tommy.
Thank you.
I wish you could get the gig.
Well, I do my best. You have to write into them upstairs.
Right, okay, well, I will write.
Lots of love, you take care.
I'm not finished yet.
All right, carry on then.
Right, my God is a person who I talk to when I talk to myself.
That sounds extremely reasonable. Because at least...
God's are born and not created.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Everybody's a God.
Does your God tell you when you're going wrong and when you're going right in your life at the same time?
Yes, because my wife tells me when I'm going wrong. My children tell me when I'm going wrong.
Yeah.
My children tell me when I'm going right. They're my gods.
Beautiful.
And then the real reason why I rang you was the conversation you had about education.
Okay.
Because I could not agree with you more.
Okay.
But I'd like to know what your solutions are. Because all your families are teachers.
Yes.
You must all have conversations about it.
Yes. It's very difficult. It's usually an ecumenical matter.
I've been on before and we've had a little bit of this, that and the other. But I'd love to know what your solutions are because I think you have the solution for education.
Right. I think what we have to do is we have to make sure that teaching is tailored and suited to the individual's needs. Wouldn't you agree?
You're right.
And also, I think if we can make everybody individuals, like all the same but different, then everybody will get the best chance for the best education that they can possibly receive.
I won't.
Who's that? I won't. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, man. I'm still here.
Yeah. Well, you said I won't.
No, that was the voice in your head.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, that was God.
That my educational head?
All right and everything's peachy.
I just wondered what your solutions would have been, because I mean, my family is
doing that. I think we should give them all raise their pay by 10% per capita, pro rata per diem, and then
I do believe I agree with you. I do believe teachers are undervalued.
They are massively so, massively so, and also
because
sorry, carry on, my friend, carry on.
Sorry, I had brilliant teachers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm 52 years of age, tad younger than you.
Yeah, just a little bit younger than me.
I had teachers now who I can still remember their names.
Yeah.
And don't take this the wrong way, I loved the teachers that taught me.
Yeah. Well, some of them, I imagine, so, yeah, you've got some, I've got some years on you. In them days, some of them, you know, were, yeah, probably a bit hairier, I would have thought, than they are now. You don't see many teachers with beards, do you, these days?
They were tough teachers.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure you learn.
Ruled with an iron fist in a leather glove most of the time.
Yeah,
Gavin,
yeah.
2 minutes to the news, 2 minutes.
And so I think if we can just take all this away with us, what we've both thought, your points are very, very valid, and I think whatever you say makes absolutely perfect sense to you, and that's a beautiful thing, and what I said makes perfect sense to me. So if we can go away from this saying that we both agree on something, without question, don't we?
The Education Secretary.
Pardon?
You become Education Secretary.
With
what you said about
behind
education.
Me, my friend, anything's possible. Thanks
well,
for your
you're
call.
You're old enough.
Help.
1 minute 15 to the news.
Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, funny thing happened to me on the way to the studio tonight. I was looking at some swans, and I thought, can they really break your arm with their wings?
60
you know the number, 08-something-something-something-1000, or you can get in touch with the text and the email and the Twitter. Has a swan ever broken your arm? This and more coming up. I've got no, I don't know what to do.
45
coming
seconds.
Up in the next thing. Is that it? We haven't news yet, man.
35 seconds to the news.
5 seconds. Coming up is the news. 35?
35, yeah. 30 now.
Okay, 30 seconds. What I like to do, if I've got 30 seconds of time, is wait till it gets about 20 seconds about this time.
20
of the
seconds.
Night. And I like to just think about what would Jesus do with 20 seconds? And I think, ladies
seconds.
And gentlemen.
9.
The answer will be
7,
coming up after the news
5, 4,
in a minute
3,
with Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
It's Saturday morning. Good morning. The collapse of civilization in the next few decades is something that we've covered in the first part of this programme. We also heard about a woman who was arrested for tooting a toy trumpet when a tree that she wanted to preserve was being cut down in Sheffield. And a policeman arrested her, having told her that if she tooted on her trumpet again, she would be arrested. And, you know, as a teacher, former teacher, one of the things I learned very quickly is you never, ever deliver an ultimatum and say the next person who, or if you do that again, I'll, because they will. And then you're stuck with doing whatever it is that you said you'd do. In the case of the copper, arresting a woman for tooting on a toy trumpet, he had to do it because he said to her, if you do it again, I'll arrest you. Anyway, growing older is no guarantee of growing wiser, scientists have discovered. And they did some quite interesting tests in order to validate this. Scientists have found that growing older is no guarantee to growing wiser if wisdom is an intuitive knack for grasping how others think and behave. Now, of course, we could spend a long time discussing the definition of wisdom, but the one that they used was you're wise if you have a good intuitive understanding of other people. and what they're going to say and why they say it and why they behave. But in a series of tests, the old did no better than the young in testing how well they understood human foibles, such as, I'll ask Kath and Sam their thoughts on this, they were asked how well they understood human foibles, such as the way people tend to work harder in a group than on their own. I did not know that that was the case. I work very hard on my own and in a group.
Well, some groups can be rather distracting.
Some groups, all you do is chat away all day.
Yeah.
Exactly. The most adept natural psychologists, which again is a sort of definition of wisdom, were... Do you think you're quite wise, Kath? Come on, we all do.
But that probably means we're not, doesn't it?
Here's their definition of wisdom. The most adept natural psychologists were clever, gloomy, doubt-ridden introverts.
Eeyore.
In the mould of Eeyore. Or indeed Philip Larkin. Or Harper Lee.
Mm.
I didn't know Harper Lee was considered gloomy and a doubt-ridden introvert. She wrote... To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, yes.
Didn't
she? She wrote another one, though, didn't she? Before? Did she die recently?
Yeah, I think so.
And she was furious that they'd released that book.
The previous one?
Yes.
Yes, again, what was that called? Can't remember. What I always like about the story of the greatest novel ever written, which is To Kill a Mockingbird, mm-hmm. written by Harper Lee, is that she was a literary agent working alongside Truman Capote, terrible man, but a great writer, who had gone off to this American village in the middle of nowhere where a terrible murder had taken place because he wanted to completely change the genre of the novel. And she took the room next to him in the motel. And he was up all night for about 6 months living in the environment where this terrible murder took place. An entire family, mother, father and all the children killed by these two hoodlums in a farmhouse. And Truman Capote researched it all day long and talked to people, talked to the criminals who were eventually hanged. In fact, he was there when they were hanged. And then he bashing away on this typewriter. And at the end of it all, he came up and he said to his literary agent, I've done it. I've written the greatest novel in the history of English literature. What have you been doing all the while? And she said, well, I've been scribbling away something as well. And then she published hers and he published his. And everyone said, Truman, that's a great book in cold blood.
Yes.
Nowhere near as good as To Kill a Mockingbird, which she wrote in the room next to you whilst you were writing in cold blood. Isn't that a great story?
It's a great story.
I hope it's mostly true.
Yeah, I've read both of those books. They're both good.
They're both good?
Yeah. But so you're your right, favourite is... To Kill a Mockingbird edges it.
What's the book you've read most times?
Wuthering Heights, I think.
Okay. Sam, have you read any books?
Yeah, but I only read books once.
Aha.
I can't read them a second time.
Nope.
Ooh. Mm. I think that one of the interesting things to do, maybe you're not old enough yet, Sam, this sounds terribly patronising, but there are books that I was too young for when I read them the first time around. Yes. And you read them again maybe even 5-6 years later and you think, oh, I missed that completely.
Yes.
And I'm sure it'll happen again. Keep going back to the same thing.
You can read a book over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Change of subject. Subject change, John. What was that film? Subject change, John. Sylvester Stallone. He comes back in the future. And they say things... forgive me. They say things like subject change.
Oh.
He's reawakened after 50 years of being cryogenised because they need somebody who's got his kind of physical fighting capabilities.
Of course they do.
To deal with a baddie who suddenly emerged. They've all become so passive, they don't know how to have a fight. And Sylvester Stallone was a hoodlum who was embalmed in ice rather than imprisoned or executed. And they bring him back to life and he does the deed. But he can't understand certain things. And the most intriguing bit that he can't understand is that there's no toilet paper 50 years from now.
Oh.
I know. Instead, there's just three shells on the side.
Shells?
Shells. And he keeps coming out of the toilet. All through the film, he comes out of the toilet and goes, oh. They go, you all right? Oh, yeah. What are the shells? And I want to know. 0344 499 1000 is the number. And there's this spat going on between Rod Stewart and Elton John, which I'm going to read out because Rod Stewart was being interviewed on an American TV show, and he was asked about the fact that Sir Elton John has announced in February that he is going on a farewell tour.
Yeah, but it's a really long farewell tour. It's a
huge farewell tour.
It's like it'll take about 5 years, isn't it?
It's going to take a long time. The longest, you know, goodbye seems to be the longest word. So what Rod Stewart said was, and this has been widely publicised, so I can repeat it. He said, I did email her and said, what, again, dear? And I didn't hear anything back. I didn't know you were allowed to do that, to say to a man who is gay, openly gay or slightly effeminate or whatever, I did email her.
Do they know? They know each other, though, right?
Well, there are photographs of them with their arms around each other, okay. But they're quite old photographs. Elton, for example, is wearing a hat.
Ah, that dates them rather.
Doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. And Rod Stewart is looking more like the woman who sang Lost in France than Rod Stewart.
Bonnie Tyler.
Bonnie Tyler, yes. You never saw them in the same room, did you?
No. Good reason.
So what Rod Stewart has said is, I've never spoken about retirement. If I do retire, I won't make an announcement. I'll just fade away. I don't think this big deal of I'm going to retire is right. It stinks of selling tickets. Mm. It's dishonest. It's not rock and roll.
That could come back to haunt him, couldn't it?
Couldn't it come back to haunt him? And then in the newspaper cutting that I've got in front of me, they compare Sir Elton with Rod. They're both sirs, so Sir Rod with Sir Elton.
They should joust for it, shouldn't they?
Well, they kind of had, you know, this the tale of the tape. When two boxers are fighting, they do, you know, reach, height, weight, calves, you know. They've done the same sort of thing with Elt and Rod Stewart, who, let's face it, are two pretty iconic rock stars, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, number one singles, who do you think's had the most, Rod Stewart or Sir Elton? Sir Elton. Only slightly. Seven beat six.
Really?
Number one albums. Elton or Rod? Sam, do you know who these people are we're talking about, being so young?
Yeah, I know. I know them both, yeah. I don't think I can name a Rod Stewart song.
Yeah, you could. Well, no. If you want my body, right. yeah, one.
So I know songs, but I wouldn't be able to. I can't name you any off the top of my head.
Outrageous.
But you know that they're kind of huge.
Yes, yeah, okay. I know the big deals.
So number one albums, Rod Stewart's had 8 to Elton John's 7.
Has he?
Yeah, no, that surprised me. And I don't care.
No, I don't either.
Album sales worldwide, easily Elton John wins that one.
Yeah.
100 million Rod's sold worldwide, and Sir Elton sold 200 million. Grammy nominations, Elton wins that easily, 34 over 15. Grammy wins, obviously, Sir Elton's got 5 Grammys to Sir Rod's 1. But women, or at least spouses.
Well.
No, spouses. It's closer than you might think.
Yeah, I know.
Away goals count double, so. Rod wins on the spouses. He's been married 3 times to Elton's twice.
Twice. I remember him getting married the first time.
Who?
Renata.
Renata Blau.
The sound tech, wasn't she?
Very impressive.
It was on TV.
Is it all right to be proud of knowing things like that?
It just shows that my memory's not quite gone as badly as I thought it has.
That's right. The other night we were doing a little bit of early onset, weren't we?
Oh, God, yeah. But I'm sleep deprived.
You don't look it, but I do believe you when you tell me that you could probably use 18 hours back to back, couldn't you?
Yeah, I was watching a documentary earlier on about an ashram in India. I believe it's all going to go pear-shaped, but it did look quite nice. I thought I could do a mini break at an ashram right now.
What is an ashram?
Well, like a hippie commune.
Oh, yeah.
Be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But it all goes wrong, so I should be careful what I wish for. I'll be asking for the manager.
You'll be asking for what?
The manager.
What, for a yashram?
For the yashram.
Well, you've got a heart. Your stock is high around here. I think, you know, you can but ask. You can but ask. Now, this just in, a government committee in northern India has proposed bottling cow's urine for sale as a health drink. God.
It's no weirder than drinking their milk, really, is it?
No, not really.
The first person to try that was obviously some sort of deviant.
I always wonder who was the first person to try these things.
Yeah.
You know, these ancient tribes, these Britons who were hunter-gatherers, and they would wander from place to place, and they would get down... Say they arrived at the coast, and they decided to go hunter-gathering on the beach. They came back with some mussels. And some person has got to be the first one to try them to find out that they're not poisonous, haven't they?
Yeah.
And that person must have been a big, big person in the tribe, because often that person must die, surely. You know, deadly nightshade. Blimey, eating shellfish alone is, you're asking for trouble.
You've got to be very careful.
Got to be very careful.
Why do you think it's milk from cows that we've alighted on particularly? Because there are all sorts of other mammals we could have...
Which? Cows have got great big udders. Dogs haven't.
No, but dogs would do anything for a belly rub, wouldn't they?
Could you drink dog's milk?
I think you probably could.
Of course you could.
But I suppose cows are a little bit more...
Huge
amenable.
Udders. Eight gallons a day or something comes out of a cow, doesn't it?
Someone's tried dog's milk out there.
03444991000. Have you tried dog's milk?
Someone has in the world. In the history of the world, someone's done it.
In the Maasai Mara in Africa, where I found myself one day with a film crew, the men of the Maasai wander around with a beaker around their neck, carved from wood. And in that, they don't eat. In that... They make the concoction that they live on, which is a mixture of blood and cow's milk. And all the cows wandering around the campsite have a tap in their neck. And the guys, if they're hungry, and these big, big dudes, big, 6'6", all of them, magnificent robes, very dignified, and they just wander around the camp, and if they go, you know, fancy an 11s, they just go up to a cow, put the cup underneath the tap in their neck, turn it on and get half a cup of blood, then go underneath the cow, squeeze the teat, and they've got their meal for the day, which is a bowl of mixed cow's milk and blood. I wanted to sample it, but I wasn't offered it, and I felt it would have been...
Impolite to ask.
Presumptuous to ask. But yes, so the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party, who the Prime Minister is Narendra Modi, have proposed expanding its range of bovine health products to make cow urine easily available to the common public. We will promote, I'm quoting now, cow urine as a health-giving drink. Drinking 10 millilitres to 20 millimetres of cow urine daily will act as a preventative against seasonal diseases like fever, cough, and stomach-related ailments. And proponents also claim that it will cure some cancers. So if the Daily Mail get hold of that, there'll be a run on cow's urine in Holland and Barrett, won't there? Because that's how it works. Let's rush to Western Supermare, because we have Barry standing by with his wisdom. Good evening, morning, sorry. Barry, hello.
Hi, Tommy. Hello, Cal.
Hiya, Barry.
Hope you had a nice day off.
Meh. It wasn't really... thank you.
Yeah, just a quick question, Tommy, before I've got a couple of things to mention to you. I moved away from the radio last night. I think the caller mentioned Stephen, the homeless gentleman. I just got back at the end of it, so how's he doing?
Fine, as far as we know, and still living in a tent... behind one of the outbuildings in the car park of a pub next to the level crossing in Port Slade.
Yeah, I've thought about him a few times, Tommy. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I was just on classrooms and teaching, Tommy. Obviously, massive involvement with your relatives and your own experience. It's just to say that back in my time, I'm going sort of back to 1957, the classrooms were quite scary places. I went to a boys' secondary modern school. I think a lot of the teachers had sort of they'd been away at 5 years of war, from what I've learned since, probably emergency trained. But there was a great deal of corporal punishment for things that, I guess, you know, kids are kids, but it didn't warrant some of the punishments that were handed out. One teacher in particular, he'd pull you from your desk, you know, by your hair. Really was a very violent man with a very short temper. And it was interesting, but one of the pupils went on to do very well in education. Actually wrote a book about the area that we used to live, which is a mining community back in Staffordshire. And he mentioned his school days. And the teacher in question, the one that I was referring to, it turned out that he'd been a prisoner of the Japanese for most of the war. So obviously that would have explained some of the reasons behind why he was so hostile to pupils. But as I say, generally speaking, they were very scary places. The actual process of education, I think, a lot was missed because...
Well, what did you learn there that you've used again in life?
Not very much in...
Can you think of anything?
Yes, obviously. I learned to read.
Reading and writing, definitely, but although that can be done outside.
I learned...
These prison ships. But what did you learn, you know, that you actually were able to make use of, either in your own life or in your work life?
I learned how to cope with situations.
Wait a minute. You got me on... Yeah, that, you're absolutely right. What we learn that we use throughout our lives in school is not that which is taught, it is that which we discover for ourselves in the playground.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you in the classroom, you would learn that Otto von Bismarck unified all the German countries to create the modern Germany. But in the playground, you would learn to understand the methodology that he used to do that, which was a mixture of cunning and bullying.
That's right.
Wouldn't learn bullying and cunning and how to deal with those two things from what you learned about Otto von Bismarck. You would learn it in the playground or in the corridors of your school or in the bus on the way home with the kids who are older than you. You would learn the techniques for avoiding being bullied and avoiding bullying yourself, which is the kind of cunning that we use in life to stay just ahead of the rest if we're lucky enough to be able to do that. The only great virtues in school, as far as I'm concerned, are those things. We also, in secondary schools, we learn that there are different types of adults. When you're at primary school, you tend to have just one adult teacher. So you've only got one adult to think about. But when you go to secondary school, you've got a maths teacher, an English teacher, a chemistry teacher, and so forth. Probably about 18 or 20 different adults that you come into serious contact with during the course of an academic week. And you get to discover that there are adults who are nice and you want to be around them and you want to associate yourself with people like that for the rest of your life. But you also learn that there are adults who are remote, who are unfair, who lack empathy, because there are plenty of teachers like that. And you learn that those are the sort of people that you want to avoid, unless yourself you've turned into somebody who has no empathy, in which case, curiously enough, you'll find yourself being empathetic towards other people who lack empathy. But that's got nothing to do with what goes on the blackboard, because none of that's got any relevant to real life.
No, I think what I got from it was a coping strategy at such a young age.
Yeah.
Because I knew that I'd got a job. I knew I was going into the mining industry. I knew that at 15 that I would be leaving school. And because of the fear that was in the classrooms, I found out, you know, again, it comes down to discipline. Was I being taught the proper way with respect? I don't think I was. I think it was fear that was motivating me to keep my head down. Now, when I left and I went amongst older guys down in coal mines, and there was a respect for them. I can't honestly say, I can't think of a teacher that I genuinely could honestly say I had respect for.
No.
But some of the guys that I worked for, that were talking to me in a different way, that were showing me things to keep me safe, that seemed to have a concern about my welfare. And I'm sure the teachers did, but it never come through to me.
No. Barry, thank you for your call. Interesting stuff. Barry in Western Superman. You're tuned to Talk Radio. It's Tommy looking after the show whilst Ian is getting a bit of R&R. Sammy's here and Kathy's here as well. And you're listening to Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We're back to talking about opticians. We got onto spectacles because of the supplies ad for Specsavers. Then a gentleman rang up and said that he was a spectacle maker. And I've just asked Kath about her weekend and how it's shaping up. And it turns out that one of her highlights is going to be taking her daughter to the opticians because...
My daughter loves it.
She loves it.
Now, do you remember when we were kids, getting glasses was like painting a target on you?
Ignominious.
My daughter cannot wait.
Why?
Because glasses are cool, aren't they now?
Are they? Really?
There are people wearing glasses with clear lenses.
Yes.
She loves them.
Go figure. Interesting, isn't it? See, I don't know how it's come about that the if you are slightly disabled in that your eyesight doesn't work, you're given a piece of equipment that is considered a fashion icon. Whereas if your hearing is similarly deficient, they manage to try to disguise it so that you can't possibly see that you're wearing this object because it's shameful, presumably. That's the same with walking sticks. They're trying to jazz them up a little bit. But they're still, and Zimmer frames as well. They've got wheel ones with wheels now, haven't they? Which look to me like an accident waiting to happen, really. Zoom, out from underneath you. But somewhere along the line, spectacles turned into Savile Row.
Yeah. And braces, dental braces. Kids all want those.
That I don't get. That you're absolutely right. Yeah, I know a 13-year-old is desperate to get their first set of braces.
Mm-hmm.
Did you wear braces?
No.
Did they hurt your teeth? You got good teeth, haven't you?
Top ones are all right. The bottom ones are very crooked, but who cares about those?
Have a look. No, they're not very crooked.
They're crooked, though.
No, they're not. What about you, Sam? How are your teeth?
Yeah, never had braces.
No, let's have a look. Good teeth.
Not even had a filling.
Oh. Not had a filling?
No.
I bet you had a lot of good boy stickers.
Yeah, sure.
How many fillings have you got, Kath? Plenty.
One, I think.
One?
Mm-hmm.
You see, I'm a victim of a deal that was done between the fledgling National Health Service and the upstart Australian National Health Service. What happened was we offered to train all the upcoming Australian dentists for free, providing they worked for the National Health Service for a year, I think it was, after they qualified, so that there'd be plenty of dentists to go round in this country after the Second World War. But what the Aussie dentists discovered was that they'd get a payment for every filling that they did. Had to do. So my dentist, and I can remember it now, every time I went to see him, every 6 months, I got dragged in there and he'd do a little examination and then he'd go to the sink and he'd start washing his hands and he'd just go, one little filling there, Tommy. Every time. One little filling there, Tommy. He had a yacht. A yacht.
Of course he did.
He had a yacht parked outside in his drive. One little filling there, Tommy. Bastard. Talking about opticians, the second best joke I know. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
But it's an optician's joke. Man goes to the opticians and the optician says, sit down on that seat. Cover your right eye with your left hand and read that board. And the man looks at his hands and he thinks, right? So he puts his left eye over his left hand and the optician says, no, cover your right eye with your left hand and read that board. So the man looks at his hands again and he puts his right eye over with his right hand. The optician gets fed up with this. So he goes out the back and he empties a box of cornflakes and he cuts a single hole in the cornflake box and he comes back out and he sticks it over the man's head. And he's just about to say, read that board, when the man starts crying.
Oh.
I know. His shoulder's going up and down. You can hear him inside the box, reverberating. This low weeping noise. Very sad. The dentist says, what's the matter? The man says, well, I was hoping I'd get a gold-rimmed pair like my brother. Which I think is a beautiful joke because of the last little bit. Like my brother. In other words, he hasn't got anything wrong with his eyesight. He just wants a pair of flash glasses, like his brother. But he assumes that instead of getting a gold-rimmed pair, he's got a Kellogg's Cornflakes box with one eye hole cut in it. I love that joke. I don't know why. I think it's probably my second favourite all-time gag. Seth is on the line, possibly for the second time this evening, or just the second person called Seth. Hello, Seth.
Tommy, how you doing, lad? Do you remember me from Star Trek night?
You said that about Wednesday, Seth, so let's move on to the present day.
Yeah, that was me on Wednesday, so I have no idea who that was earlier. I haven't lived in Florida for 10 years, Tommy. So whoever that was from Orlando, he must be a fan or an impressionist or something like that, and heard me on radio before, but that's not why I'm calling, Tommy, yeah?
All right, well, you're working hard, and that often makes up for a lot, so keep working hard.
It does, thank you. I'm glad you said working, eh? Anyway, I'm in Bogdale, Yorkshire, and I'm actually a dairy farmer, Tommy. Got 180 cows, milk them twice a day, machine milk them, get approximately about 3,000 litres, which is 16 litres a cow, and I wouldn't dream of milking the bladders. I'll tell you why, Tommy. There's a reason urine should not be drunk, and that's because it's excreted by the body. It's getting rid of everything, getting rid of the toxins. But I have been approached, ironically.
No. Wait. Lots of beautiful women drink their own urine, don't they, Kath?
Demi Moore.
Demi Moore does as well. There you are, you see.
Yeah, but look at her these days, Tommy. She's not looking well, is she? Not for her age. But, you know, in India, they call this drink Gamutra. And I've actually been approached to get urine from the cows, but I said no. But what Gamutra is, they actually distill the urine, and it's about 5-10% in the drink, because you've got to distill it first.
I wouldn't want the concentrate. I'd want the dilute.
Exactly, Tommy. And the thing is that people read these daft articles, and they end up drinking the full potent stuff, and that makes them ill, Tommy. You know, if you've heard of homeopathy, that's about actually taking certain things that you shouldn't in a dilute form so that they counteract the actual disease. And people believe that in the cow's urine there's antibacterial properties, but there isn't. I'm telling you as a fact and an expert, there is not.
No, but this is partly to do with the fact that in India the cow is considered by some to be sacred.
Absolutely.
And therefore, I suspect there are some who think, erroneously, we would say, perhaps, that the cow's urine has mystical qualities.
I understand that. I believe it comes from Ayurvedic medicine, which is some of the most ancient medicine in ancient India. So, if you've ever followed people like Deepak Chopra, I don't know if you've heard of him, Tommy.
Yes, I have.
Well, yes, he's a guru, very much into Ayurveda, and he says we have three body types, all to do with Ayurvedic medicine, and if you're a certain body type, certain things will work in a homeopathic way, but not for all body types. You've got to find out what body type you are first, but I don't
believe... Well, what are the three body types, then? Because we in the West believe there are three body types, and what are they again? There's ectomorph, mesomorph, and endomorph.
I've heard of endomorph, not the other two. But I can't remember. Oh, you're going back from... God, these are books from years ago, Tommy. I don't remember the exact three types, but the other two types are very sensitive to the thing that works for the third type, if you get my drift.
Yes.
So, lemons, for example, you know, if you're a certain body type, your body actually converts lemons into a toxin rather than something that helps you.
Yes, so, aubergines apparently have the same effect. They can be quite an irritant.
Exactly. So if you're growing up in India and you're into your Ayurvedic medicine, you must find out your body type first.
Thank you, Seth, for your call and your wisdom, your knowledge, your far-reaching understanding of affairs, not only in this country, but around the world. Do you know the most horrible story I think I've read for a long time is in front of me now, and I'm not sure whether I want to read it out?
It beats the tapeworm story.
It beats the tapeworm story. Do I read it out? I'll tell you what, as I read it... it's quite late, but it is upsetting. Shall I read it out? No, I'm not going to.
Good decision.
I'll go on to, instead, a lovely, stupid story. Tom Bower's new biography of the Prince of Wales is full of stories that portray Charles as being somewhat demanding. Forgive me. And one tale, which involves our future king, visiting some friends, he sent on a lorry ahead, containing everything that he would need for the visit, from his own furniture to sit on, to whiskey. So you're going round to a mate's, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Presumably you're going to watch the football or something. And before you get there, a lorry turns up with the chair. Can you believe this? And he sends a chair on ahead. And the whiskey he wants to drink when he's round there.
Well, you bring a bottle, don't you?
I know, but not an armchair. The shocking thing, this commentator says, is not the wild excess of FedExing your personal lavatory paper ahead, which I didn't get through the full inventory of the things that he sent on ahead. So a chair to sit on, his favourite chair, some whiskey, and some of his own preferred type of toilet paper. Or even that he apparently, having sent his own chair, furniture, toilet paper and whiskey on ahead, he cancelled. He pulled out. He didn't turn up. And apparently, according to the biography, the reason that he didn't turn up was because he discovered that the hosts had hired staff and ordered in massive amounts of food and flowers. So he didn't want this thing to be a fussy affair. But on the other hand, he sent his chair on ahead, along with his own preferred type of whiskey and toilet paper. Any thoughts?
Well,
is it true? It's coming out in a biography of him, so it will be dispersed when it's published.
I would find it very strange that someone whose mother and sister are known to be very thrifty...
And down to earth.
We'd be quite so decadent. There must be something we're missing from that story. Maybe it was a joke.
What do you mean? Maybe he was a wind-up. Maybe it was, you know, because he's supposed to have sort of a sense of humour,
yes,
isn't he? He likes the goons and...
A silly sense of humour.
Yeah. So maybe he's just taking the mickey. I don't know. It is difficult, isn't it? If you've been invited round somewhere and you suddenly don't want to go.
Yeah.
And you've got a sort of there's always a half reason not to go, isn't there?
I never want to go anywhere, but I...
I never want to go anywhere.
I don't.
No, I don't. Nor do I. I don't want to go.
I think it must be something to do with working nights. It's when I get a rare night to myself, I don't like to share it.
I don't want to have anything in the diary.
No.
I don't want to see that at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, I'm meeting Dave down the pub.
Yeah, exactly.
I look at it and I go, oh, I don't want to go. I don't mind if somebody rings up and says, you want to come down the pub now, but it's the prospect of...
Yeah,
looming ahead.
I start to feel very aggravated if I realise that the whole weekend has been spoken for.
That drives me mad. If I find out that we're doing something on Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, oh, no.
There is a petulant 14-year-old in me that thinks, will people stop counting on me?
What? Yes.
People stop speaking for my spare time.
Yes. Yeah, I just want nothing to do.
But then once I'm there, I have a lovely time.
You don't want to leave?
No.
You can't get you. We can't get rid of you, can we?
Get me back in once I'm out.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning. They're serving you the kind of liqueurs that they hope will make you want to go away. Fernet Branca is a good example. Drambuie.
But I always think...
Like a little Drambuie.
The second will always taste nicer.
Yeah. We're out of wine, Kath. You drunk all the wine. Would you like to try some Grand Marnier on its own?
Yeah. that's left.
Because back in the days when you used to have dependent, when you were dependent on a taxi, you did used to be stuck round there, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody would order a taxi at about 1:30, and they'd be told that it would be there in 30 to 45 minutes. Then it's 3 a.m. That's me. That's my tummy. That one. Reminder that the telephone number is 033. No, it's not. It's 0344 499 1000. We've got about 20 minutes to go before it's who time?
It will be Martin Kellner.
Brilliant. Martin Kellner will be here at 1. You can text. There's time. 87222. Start your message with talk. That will cost 25p plus your network charge. Or you can tweet us at Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy
Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
I looked at one point as though I was going to have to read out the worst news story I've read myself for a long time, and I would have done it because we're a good 10 minutes away from saying good evening to Martin, but luckily John has called from Hamilton. So that will say, hello, John. Thank you for calling. Very well, you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. You were talking about spectacles and disabilities with wearing glasses and not wearing glasses and how they've become a fashion item.
Hmm.
And I was just wondering, we are there now, but we weren't there before, because I think that was why contact lenses took off. So they've gone maybe a further journey than some other disabilities, and maybe hearing aids will change. Maybe they'll become fashionable at some point and then revert again.
Well, there's no reason why they couldn't make designer hearing aids, because a lot of people decorate their ears anyway and have done for thousands of years.
Yeah, yeah.
So really, all you need to do is make a hearing aid look like an earring.
Or a headphone type thing, yeah.
Yeah, or a piercing.
Yeah, you know? And it's not unusual to see people with things in their ears now. Anyway, they're always talking in phones or doing whatever. You wouldn't know. You wouldn't know if someone was deaf necessarily just by looking at them.
No, I was on the tube this evening coming here, and I just found myself looking along the lines of people, and virtually absolutely every single person was on their phone or their tablet, which always makes me want to not do it. I almost feel like going, look, this is how you can do it without staring into your phone.
Yeah, I've recently succumbed. Maybe 2 years ago, I got my first smartphone, and I used to look down on people who were consumed with their phones on the way home from work, but now I've fallen among their number, I'm afraid.
So now you're a slave to your phone?
I am, and I try not to be. I try not to be, but most of the time it's actually listening to like podcasts and so on. But just because you're listening to it, you still have it in your hand and you flick through things. And
yeah, I'll tell you the habit that I've got into that I've got to get out of, and that's when I wake up in the morning and I'm aware that I'm awake.
Uh-huh.
I've always got my phone on the bedside thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's always switched off. And I reach over and I can switch it on now without looking.
Uh-huh.
And it takes about 8 seconds before it's back. And then I go to check the news. And the reason I check the news is because in my life, on certain occasions, terrible things have happened overnight.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to make sure nothing terrible's happened overnight. That's how I do it. What do you do, Kath?
I do a similar thing, but because I don't wear a watch, I reach my phone to see what time it is.
Time it is, yeah.
And then you're lost.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in it.
Yeah. They've been designed to make you addicted, you know, all these different apps.
What do you mean
these
by
things that
have
notifications. You see a red dot, you have to clear it. That's human nature wants to sort of sort through things. Now, before, I used to have emails piling up all the time. I wasn't constantly being made aware of
the red dot that says you've got 7 emails waiting.
Or you have a notification. It kind of makes you feel better for serving that.
Get rid of the red dot.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I do that with updates on apps.
Yeah.
I go to the phone and it says there are 6 updates waiting on the apps, and I don't need them. Sometimes they're apps I never use, but I still go tick, 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 and watch the little thing go round. And I go to my main screen and see that the red dot's gone. That's
something
very
gratifying about that.
Are you a slave to your mobile, Sammy? I'm involving everyone, John. I'll be back with you in a second. Yeah.
No, I tend to not care about my phone too much.
Ooh.
Oh, he's one of those.
And it annoys me when people Oh, like the amount of times that you try and have a conversation with someone.
Yeah.
And they're just... Yeah.
I can't bear that.
We've all seen people, young people mainly, sorry, but it's true, round a restaurant table, five of them, and they're all on their mobile phones. Yeah. But Jane and I say to each other, well, maybe they're actually texting each other because they find that a better way of communicating.
There's actually a word for, you know, if you're talking to someone and all of a sudden you notice that they've picked up their phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's called fubbing.
Called?
Fubbing.
Fubbing.
Fubbing. It's a mixture of phones and snubbing. We've got a rule in our house, no phones at the table. And that's really for the grown-ups, because the kids aren't allowed phones. My daughter, who is 9, has been pestering me for a phone for the last 2 years.
Get her one.
Nope.
Get her one.
Not happening.
Get her one.
No. I'm going to try and keep her out of that addiction loop for as long as possible.
Get her a phone. They're great. You can keep tabs on them.
No, you can't. She'll switch it off.
They don't.
They get wise.
Oh, not obtrusively. No, they quite like it that you know where they are when they go into town on their own and you know to within 3 feet where they are. That's a huge thing for parents.
Nah, she's 9.
Does she go into town on her own?
No.
Nah, well, when she does, you will give her a mobile phone and you will download an app, something like Find a Friend or, you know, People 360. They're brilliant apps. And you can see them walking along the pavement and you know they're safe.
We'll see.
We will. Talking about new words then, very quickly, this biologist, Paul Ehrlich, who is predicting the end of civilization as we know it within 10 to 20 years.
Oh, yeah, that fella.
He says the first empirical evidence that we are dumbing down Homo sapiens were the Republican debates in the US 2016 presidential elections and the resultant kakistocracy.
Kakistocracy.
Kakistocracy. And then it doesn't go on to say what kakistocracy is.
Is that about kak?
Could you Google it for me? K-I-K.
Kikistocracy.
No, it says kakistocracy here. K-A-K.
K-A-K.
K-A-K-I-S-T-ocracy.
All right,
The 2016 Republican debates in the presidential elections...
It just means, Tommy, that the stupid people are in charge.
That's exactly what he means. A system of government which is run by the worst, least qualified, or most unscrupulous citizens.
Kakistocracy.
Coined as early as the 17th century.
Really?
And was used by the English author Thomas Love Peacock in 1829. Significant usage in the 21st century.
I would agree with anything anybody called Thomas...
Love Peacock.
Love Peacock. has to say, if that's his real name...
Well, it has to be. You wouldn't choose it, would you?
Thomas Love Peacock. What's your weekend looking like, John, before I let you go?
It's looking okay. I'm going to Berlin for the weekend. Well, going in Sunday morning.
Wait a minute. Are you the part of the party that were going to Berlin who were on the phone
yesterday? No, I'm not.
We've got this drove of Talk Radio phone-in contributors going to Berlin.
What's happening in Berlin?
Independently.
I won't be bumping into them, I don't think. I think there's 10 of them going.
Ten of the other guys, yes. How many of you are going?
Just two. Yeah, it'll be a more civilized couple of days, I think, than ten guys going to Berlin.
Sedate whoopee will be had.
Yeah. Well, have a great time.
I will do. Oh, can I just say, Tommy, you made me buy a book a few years back, and I'm still not sure about it, whether I should have bought it or not. It's by an author called Chogyam Trungpa.
Shambhala?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You made me... Well, you didn't make me, but you kind of did make me buy it, just the way you used to talk about it, and...
Well, if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you.
It did for a while.
Oh, okay.
It did, and then it didn't, and...
Ah.
Now I'm not sure, but maybe it just depends how I'm feeling at a certain time.
From Shambhala... The greatest act of courage is not being afraid of who you really are. Yeah. I mean, that's worth the $9.99, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a lot of good stuff in it. But as I say, at the time, I was probably just ripe for the picking, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And I was open to it all. And I was taking it. Whereas
You're probably too young, John. But thanks for your call. And stick with Shambhala. You never know. Maybe the second time round when you're a bit older. Martin joins us, who... himself is a man, sort of, with a Buddhist aura about him.
Totally, totally. What a legend, Tommy Boyd, it's amazing.
Let Martin Kilner, I was saying to Kath.
Oh, I'm going to leave you boys too.
We've never actually met, I don't think.
No, we haven't, it's lovely to meet you, you know.
So I said to Kath, because, you know, he'd be weekdays and I'd be weekends, or I'd be midnight and you'd be 6 a.m.
Well, do you know what, I used to listen to you regularly, and I thought it was a fabulous show. When I used to cover football for The Guardian, so I'd go to a football match on a Saturday, and then I'd have to drive home. And I put, I think it would have been Talk Sport or Talk Radio UK, I can't remember, but it was at about 6 or 7 o'clock on a Saturday evening.
Yeah.
And it would, you know, I lived in Leeds then, and I'd be driving up from, say, Birmingham, Aston Villa, somewhere like that, and I'd listen to the whole show. And it was just a fantastic... Was that Talk Sport? Was
something
that,
like that, yes. Yeah. Yes.
You've forgotten as well.
No, you've reminded me that one of the programme controllers going way, way, way back, a very nice Geordie called John Simons, saw me in the corridor the other day, and he said, on this occasion, and he went in his accent, he said, saw me, man. He said, you know a fella called Morten Kellner, or something like that. I said, yeah. Yes, I know of him. He said, yeah, he said, well, you want to watch out, because he's after your job.
No,
that's
never.
What he said.
You did it. I couldn't do this stuff. I've always said on air, because I worked with James Whale for ages and ages and ages, and I always marvel at yourself and James and Ian and people like that who can talk on air to, I mean, I don't want to be disparaging, all these...
I understand what you mean.
Yeah, but those sort of people. I couldn't do it in a million years, so I've never been... I mean, all my shows...
But it's
shows,
what you do now.
No, not at all. I mean, basically, yeah, I can talk to people on the air, but not in the way that you do it. Fantastic. I mean, I shouldn't be here saying, you know, another broadcaster saying... But you... I would never, ever deign to be after your job, or James's, or Ian's, anything like that.
No, I think what it was they were desperate for any... The World Cup was coming up.
Right.
And Talk Radio...
it was the 1966 World Cup.
And Talk Radio had found themselves... They'd accidentally purchased some matches. Right?
Ah, right.
And they were looking for anybody who worked in Talk Radio and knew anything about football.
Right.
And you know that most people in Talk Radio actually don't know which...
That's true,
you know, they like Formula One. Mm. If that.
Yes.
And because I was stuck with being a bit of a football fan, Johnny Simon said to me, can you go in there? We'll give you Alan Mullery... And all you got to do is pop up before the game, half time, and afterwards, saying to Alan, well, how do you think it's going? You know, yeah, I can do that. Unfortunately, the commentary that we were using went down, and so I had to commentate on a match without knowing. I hadn't rehearsed the players or anything. I didn't even have the team sheets.
You're not a fan.
Well, it was something like Germany versus Ghana, right? So I'm saying, I'm having to go, okay, well, the commentary's gone down. The commentary was being done from a hotel room because our Talk Radio team didn't even have tickets for the match.
No, I remember those days.
So they were commentating from a hotel room, but at least they were geared up as to who the players were. But I had to go, well, it looks as though Ghana have got the ball and one of their players is coming across the halfway line. He's been tackled by a German.
Fantastic.
And he's passed it to another German.
Yeah.
Looks like it could be Rudiger, but I'm not sure. Anyway, just shortly after that, he said, you need to watch out, mate, because there's somebody who's...
Yeah. No, never.
Knows more about it than you. Yeah. Who's your team, by the way?
West Ham is my team.
You're a Hammers fan.
I'm a Hammers fan.
There's a lot of them around here.
Yes, there are. It's a very popular... sort of media team, or tabloid newspaper team especially. All the tabloid sports editors.
How did you come to be a West Ham fan?
Well, when I was down in London in the 70s, because I was brought up north and we were rugby league, our family, so we always went to rugby. But when I came down here, I needed a football team.
Yeah.
And I liked West Ham, you know, I liked the team.
Yeah.
And we won the first year I was down here, 74, 75. I was only 6 years old. But, they won the cup that year as well.
They did.
75 won the cup.
They did. Were you there?
Yes, I was. I was there.
Me
both
too. Where were you?
Beat Fulham. I was
behind the goal that you scored twice in.
Yeah, well, I was behind the opposite goal.
Both
when I went to 79-80 as well, when Trevor Brookings scored that header.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And behind that goal, we couldn't... Because the view at Wembley in those days was terrible. It was nearly news time. The view was terrible. And the sort of rumour went round that Trevor Brookings had scored with his head.
Yeah.
And people didn't believe it.
No,
never Trevor Brookings with his head.
I could talk to you all night, but we're going to do the news.
Yes,
and then we're all going to listen to you.
Bless you.
All right, then. Thanks, Sam, and thanks, Kath, for a lovely week.